see in whatever that you want. Just 5 minutes. You can take that long, then you can sit with it. Thank you. There's tea, there's everything there. Just for the next 5 minutes. Thank you. Honourable members and guests, and morning and welcome to this meeting. Members, there's an agenda in front of you. Before I start, can we adopt the agenda, please? If there's anything to add, you can add. Hey, Bonjipala.
I propose for adoption.
Honorable Manchipala has moved for adoption. Any seconder? Honorable Moss and Honorable Lodgett. Honorable members and guests, my name is Thandile Sunduza. I'm the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee. And as you all know that today we're meeting council after last week. We asked them kindly to excuse us because they did not bring what we wanted. We wanted detailed information. Before I go further on introductions, can I just introduce ourselves so that we know who is here and who is not? And before that, can I check the legal team for Parliament here? Legal team? From Advocate Kutoyo's office? Oh, you are here. Oh, thank you. Oh, Dan Bon. Okay. We also have a legal team because it seems that there are legal challenges, so as I recommended that we must have legal people also here. So that because people are raising the issues of constitutions that are raised and the issues of legal matters that are raised, the legal matters also in front of me. As I said, my name is Thandile Sunduza. I'm the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee. On my right, the lady in the purple is Honorable Linda Moss. She's a whip of the committee and she's a member of the ANC. Then there's Honorable Story, who's a member of this Portfolio Committee and member of the ANC. When I was saying my story, you must know I refer to her because we call her my story, although she's honorable to others. And then we have Honorable Mabunda, who's a member of the ANC and a member of this Portfolio Committee. Next to him there, it's Honorable Shiva, who's a member of the ANC and member of this Portfolio Committee. And then you have Honorable Njetala, who's a member of COPE, who's a member of this committee. And then you have Dr. Lodgett, who's a member of this Portfolio Committee and member of the Democratic Alliance. Dr. Chogwin, can you please introduce the team that you're with today? The DG said you are representing him today.
Yes, thank you very much.
Can you feel the spaces? I know honorable members will move when the ones they came in. Hello, challenger. Because we need the mic, we need recording.
Good morning, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Honorable
Chair.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, and good morning, Honorable Members, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Mbulelo Jogweni, Acting DDG in the Department of Arts and Culture. I'm here with a huge delegation from the Department of Arts and Culture. And I would request Honorable Chair that I ask them to introduce themselves. And then, yeah, thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair and colleagues, Honorable Members. I'm Anil Singh. I'm the Director for Legal Services in the Department of Arts and Culture.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and members. My name is Masek Kanedi. I am the Minister for Legal Advice. Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Joyce Sukumani, Head of Planning.
Good morning, Honorable Members. My name is Bula Mandawakuri. I'm the Chief of Staff in the Ministry of Arts and Culture.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Members. My name is Joyce Sukumani. I'm in the Ministry of Arts and Culture.
Good morning, Chair. Jason, PNG.
Okay, thank you. Then we can go all the way around.
Good morning, members. I'm from the Office of the Deputy Minister. Good morning, members. My name is Paul from the Office of the Deputy Minister.
Good morning, honorable members. I'm the researcher for the committee.
My name is Andrew
Sewell
from Independent Newspapers.
From?
Independent Newspapers.
Okay.
Honorable members, Kaya Zun from the OISD.
I'm from the Office of the Institutions
about Democracy. Thank you, honorable members. Advocate Kutoyo.
Good morning, ma'am. Good morning, honorable members and colleagues. I am Mango Sitegoyo, the head of the Office on the Institution Supporting Democracy. That's my team, and I'm together with those colleagues. Thank you.
Okay.
Next to me, honorable members and guests, it's Johnny van der Westhuizen. He's the committee secretary of Arts and Culture. At the back there, Vera is my PA. And then today we're assisted by Nziki. Today, who's a committee assistant. At the back is Mkokeli Tanda from SABC. And the gentleman next to him. Okay. Pansalp, Doctor, over to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am Elias Nyefulo Malete, the chairperson of the Pan South African Language Board. And here with me I have the acting CEO, Mr. Chris Swepu. And on my left hand side here I have Mr. Mbilini, who is the financial manager of Pan South. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you, ladies and gentlemen. On item two, in front of me, we've got apologies. In front of me, I've got only two apologies. It's Honorable Smale from the DA, who's unable to attend. And then we've got Honorable Dapane, who is on study leave. And then I just got an apology also from Honorable Msweli from the IFP. And the other apology that I've received is from the DG, Spokava. He's off to Paris to I think it's a World Heritage Summit or something like that, but it's World Heritage. He's representing the department there. And the minister, I believe, is in cabinet today, and he's also presenting at the MCOP later today. Am I right, Lulama? Okay. Okay, thank you. Now we go to item three. Honorable members and guests, as you all know that this is the second meeting that we have with PANSALP today. Last week, PANSALP was here, as you all know. And as a committee, we were not happy with the presentation that we were bringing, that they brought to us. One of the reasons that we were not satisfied, number one, we felt that this committee is not a pass-by committee. PANSALP at this point in time is a deficit of more than 100 million and requests more funds. But the other issue is that PANSALP has written a letter to the president that they request more funds, and I'm still to receive the copy right now. It came to me in passing as a shock, even the way I received it. But thirdly, the other issue is that PANSALP is receiving money from the department, but they are reporting to Treasury. Also, there's a constitutional irregularity that says that they receive money, they report to us as a portfolio committee, but do not report to the department. I think then there is a legal issue there that is very serious. But the other issue is that we have many letters in front of us. One is Advocate Fanny. One I've received from Advocate Tando about internal issues, disputes. There's also an order from the High Court as well that one of the employees that was dismissed must go back to work. I think there are many issues that today we must get answers on, because basically it's issues that are on the media. One thing that I want to clarify, Dr. Maleta, there is nothing personal here. We are doing our work, because it sounds as if somebody is personal. And I want to clarify another issue. Dr. Lutrich is a member of this committee. Whether she knows the internal or external politics of PANSALP, she is doing a job as a public representative. There's nothing personal that she's bringing on, because it seems there was some uncomfortability that we have got no excuse about that. She's a member of this committee. She's got the right to know whether she knows internal or external, but she's a member of this committee, and it will never change. I think I should just make that very, very clear to anyone. I know it's a heated matter. It's a matter that is on media as well, as you can see at the back there. IO is here as well. And whether media is here or not, we still have to clarify these issues that are happening in PANSALP as well. It's a matter that the DG and the minister are very concerned about. It's a matter that I'm also more concerned about. Because, you see, the issue that we must not be confused about, corruption cannot be a matter. You can receive qualified reports or unqualified reports, but we don't know what the internal workplace issues, what is happening. Nepotism can be part of corruption. Abusing your power inside can be part of corruption. So today, members who have received the presentation in time, we're happy about that. There's also a lot of annexures as well. But I believe that as you present, you'll also summarize the annexures. Yes, we'll have time to go through it, but I think the most important one was the presentation that you gave. Over to you, to Pansava.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I would like to take this opportunity really to express my sincere gratitude for having allowed us to come and present us, for also giving us the opportunity to you know, to come and prepare as you requested. In this presentation, as the Chairperson have correctly indicated, we are going to take the portfolio committee through the PowerPoint presentation, and I will only refer to the annexures, which I believe I will also not dwell so much on them, but just to summarize and highlight where I think it will be necessary. Chairperson have indicated quite a number of issues that will be also be discussed, and I hope that the presentation will also address those issues. And if there will be questions, as will be expected, where we fail to, you know, clarify ourselves, I think we'll clarify ourselves through the questions. I would like really to thank the Chairperson on that basis. However, I'm going to present my presentation here, looking at the appointment of the boards and its strategy, its corporate governance as requested, the mandate of the board in terms of the constitution, and also to highlight on the reporting lines, not only to create a debate, but just to indicate that it has created some challenges with regards to funding. And also allude to the fact that discuss on the, or give a report on the suspension of the CEO and the allegations that were made by Advocate Fanny. I am, however, not sure about Advocate Tando. Probably the acting CEO will allude to that fact. Chairperson, if you allow me, let me start with the appointment of the board. The board of PENSARP is appointed by the Minister of Arts and Culture in consultation with the Portfolio Committee. This is in terms of the Section 5.1A of the PENSARP Act. The current board has been appointed in 2007 and was inducted for operation in 2008. When this board was appointed, there were only 11 members, and two of which were also resigned. That is, speak, the board has only 9 members. It should also be noted, Chairperson, that there have been some complaints from the language constituencies that the board is not represented according to the linguistic demographics. But however, as the board, we felt that the view of the portfolio committee to have only 11 members was not to address that issue as such, but to really look at the skills, and that members in the board are not in actual fact representing languages, but to perform the mandate as prescribed by the Constitution. If you go further, Chairperson, we have those are the members of the board. In its first sitting after the inauguration by the Department of Arts and Culture, Professor Ngubane and Professor Mutsa were elected as chairperson and deputy chairperson respectively. And in terms of Section 6.2 of PENSARP Act, then it was necessary for us then to have new elections, and myself and Mrs. Sarike were appointed as chairperson and deputy chairperson. However, Chairperson, I want to indicate to this committee that the Act itself, where it says a chairperson should have to be in office for a year, has been a concern for us, because really it doesn't allow a person to fulfill the mandate of the board. But however, I think it will be important for us as a board to look at that as well. But we have here with us again the high-level organization structure of the board, this organogram chairperson has been developed by the current Board of Tourism. We have two committees there in terms of the KIN 3 report, which is the Audit and the Risk Committee. We have combined the two together. And then we have the Executive Committee that consists of the chairperson, the deputy chairperson, and the CEO. Previously, we used to have about four committees that were representing the structures of PENSEL, but we felt that it is important for us to comply with the corporate governance stipulated in the KIN 3 as well. If you allow me, Chairperson, I would continue to the next slide to explain that structure as well. To say the structure of the board is part of the overall structure of the organization, and it was also approved by the board to address the governance issues. The CEO is a member of the board by virtue of his or her office, and may take part in the deliberations of the board and shall have the same rights and duties as another member or other members of the board. And the board has in writing really delegated the powers and duties to the CEO in terms of the requirements of Section 38 to 40 of the PFMA. I've already indicated that the executive committee consists of the chairperson, deputy chairperson, and the CEO, and the committees that we have. I can only point out that the audit and the risk committee has the audit and risk committee charter that is due to be approved by the board, and we have an extra B that explains to that effect. And we also have the fraud and risk management strategy as required by the Treasury Regulation 3.2.1. And I can refer honorable members to an extra C. We also have the internal audit that will be in action or in service for a period of 3 years. Chairperson, we have also the AGSA as our external auditors, and they perform our annual audits on pencil and reports to Parliament. Additional to that, Chairperson, we have undertaken to have an interim audit of pencil. We have the AGSA as an interim audit of pencil, just to audit or give us reports in the interim. And I can point out, Chairperson, that it is clear that the board has made it a point that we are online and we did not default unconsciously or deliberately, but that we must be checked from time to time. Chairperson, we also have the budget committee that approves the budget of the organization. And the CEO reports give us the report and the expenditure report on a quarterly basis according to our business plan. We have also approved a 3-year strategy and a structure that guides the organization in its delivery. And the strategy is attached, is an extra D. That also helps us, Chairperson, to keep us focused. And we have also given the objective of the strategy in line with the Constitution. The strategy is based on the mandate of the board as prescribed in the Constitution and the PENSEL Act, including the PFMA. And we are saying where the acts contradict the Constitution, the board has used the Constitution in interpreting its mandate because we feel that the Constitution is the supreme law of the country. Chairperson, the board has also approved an annual business plan to be delivered by the CEO, and the annexure there is also, we have attached there our annual business plan. Maybe it will also be important, Chairperson, to indicate that when we came into office, there was no clear strategy for the board. And we felt that it is necessary for us to have that 3-year strategy plan, but also to have an annual business plan that will make sure that the CEO or the acting CEO will continuously be reporting to us quarterly. And for the CEO to be able to report, be on the financial issues, on administrative and governance issues, we have to meet four times to get that report, as it is stipulated also by the, or as a requirement as well. And Chairperson, we have met on several occasions, as indicated in the slide there. But we have also, on the 24th of May, Chairperson, held a workshop on corporate governance. The management of the institution have done its work, they have done those chapters, but it was the board that has to do and develop the chapters, especially with regard to corporate governance. And Chairperson, the board is therefore, in my opinion, trying its best to do its mandate as prescribed. Maybe it is also important, Chairperson, to look at the mandate of the board. The board gets its mandate from the Pensions Act, from the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, and also from the Public Finance Management Act. And I have listed those mandates. But I would like to refer members to a few of them just to highlight the mandate of the board. And one of them being, and they also appear in the Act on page 15, number I, to establish provincial language committees and national language bodies to advise it on any language matter affecting a province or a specific language. And the following one, J, to establish national lexicography units to operate as companies limited by the guarantee under the section 21 of the Companies Act of 1973, and to allocate funds to the units to fulfill their functions. Chairperson, I'm highlighting these mandates points here because these are the most important structures of PENSA that they have to help the board in fulfilling its mandate. But the central purpose of the board, it is to promote multilingualism, the multilingualism in South Africa. And this is exactly what it has been indicated there on page 15, 1.2. Our central aim, it is to create conditions for the development of and the equal use of all official languages, fostering respect for and encouraging the use of other languages in the country, and encouraging the best use of the country's linguistic resources. Chairperson, to me this is very important because that is exactly what the Constitution is saying, that we are not hands-on in the development of the languages, but we are creating the conditions for the development and the equal use of these languages. If I may go on, we have the vision and statement. I may not be saying too much to that. If you allow me, Chairperson, they are simple and straightforward. Probably I would like also on page slide number 19, just to highlight the penciled strategic objectives, which are, of course, also in line with the strategic plan, also in line with the Pencil Act, but also in line with the Constitution, to promote and ensure respect for all languages commonly used by the communities in South Africa, to ensure the creation and conditions for the development of all official languages. Chairperson, what is very important for me, and I would like to indicate that, is that point number three, to ensure prudent financial management and effective corporate governance of the organization. We have highlighted this as to become one of our objectives, and it is included in the strategic plan as well as the annual business plan to make sure that we comply with the PFMA. But also important, Chairperson, we have realized that PENSAP cannot survive without having partnerships, without identifying the key stakeholders, because we have to partner with other language stakeholders to achieve this mandate. So we are in the process as well of developing such a list of stakeholders. And again, to have or to build and maintain the capability and the capacity of the organization to lead, to deliver its mandate. We need capacity at head office. We need capacity in the 9 provincial offices for us to be able to get that mandate. And we have put this as our strategic points or areas so that we can mandate the CEO to really take care of that. Chairperson, for us to be able to achieve all these objectives, we need funding. And one of the challenges that I would like to point out this morning is that there's a little bit of uncertainty, or probably a misinterpretation of whether the PENSAL is a constitutional body or it's a departmental entity. But we are just highlighting it here to create a forum and a platform where this can be deliberated so that we can be able to really know where are we supposed to report, and also in terms of travels, where do we go to. I think, Chairperson, if you allow me, this needs to be deliberated further. If you go on again, I would like to put an emphasis that should these grey areas be addressed, I think it will allow PENSAL really the opportunity to fulfill its mandate. And Chairperson, this is a historic problem that needs to be addressed. We have, I would like to emphasize here on page 21, an extra F, that we have the Office on Institutions Supporting Democracy that have also listed PENSAL as one of the institutions supporting democracy and reporting to the Office of the Speaker. And I would also refer this committee, Honorable Committee, to also Annexure G, where the Speaker wrote a letter to PENSAL dedicating a person, Advocate Pechoyo, as the liaison officer between PENSAL and Parliament. Chairperson, we need to have a forum where this can be clarified so that we are able to operate to fulfill our mandate. Chairperson, if you allow me, I'll go to item 8, which is funding. And I would ask, if you allow me, Chairperson, Mr. Mbilini, just to go through that slide only. And I'll come back again to report on the suspension of the CEO. Yes,
'Culture' is a conduit for the money received by PENSAL, which is coming from Parliament via National Treasury. The allocation of PENSAL is approved by the Cabinet and communicated to the Department of Arts and Culture. It is communicated to the Department of Arts and Culture and PENSAL by National Treasury. You see the annexure. The point there is indicating that when we do the MTF, we do the MTF for the period of 3 years, which is coming from the baseline of the period of 3 years. We present a pencil at the National Treasury for funding at our own. But because the departments are banking with CBDs, the commercial institutions are banking with commercial banks, so the money, the Treasury will write a letter to pencil and the Department of Arts and Culture indicating to us that the money has been transferred to Arts and Culture is so much amount of money. When PENSAP accounts to Parliament for the expenditure and the reports, it is not true the DAC, but through the direct communication with the Parliament. The new way is therefore surprising to us, is new. When PENSAP requests the environment of funds, it is not through the DAC, but directly with the Treasury. There is attachment in a chat J where when we're shifting funding in terms of Section 43 of the PFMA, we used to communicate. When PENSAP requests funding through MTF and E&E, it is required to do so directly with Treasury. When PENSAP requests for retention of surplus funds in terms of the PFMA, it is required to do so directly with Treasury. There is also an extra K there. When PENSAP submits annual financial statements, it submits direct to Treasury and to Parliament as required by the PFMA, Section 40, Subsection E, and Section 65 of the PFMA. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. The reason why I would like this to be highlighted, Chairperson, it is not to be arrogant to say we don't want to report to the Department of Arts and Culture. We are just raising it, Chairperson, humbly so, that we would like the clarifications to be done so that there's no tension between the Department of Arts and Culture and ourselves, because it is one of those stakeholders that we would like to work with. If you allow me, Chairperson, I will go to the suspension to report on the suspension of the CEO. On the 20th of February 2009, the board suspended its accounting officer, Mrs. Nkosi, pending investigation into alleged irregularities and misconduct. For the board to operate, we then have to appoint the acting CEO, who is Mr. Swepu here. And then we also requested Ngonke to do a forensic audit, and the CEO was charged for financial irregularities. Chairperson, I must point out that there have been some legal challenges and delays, as the hearing was only done in December 2010. And the delays, we have submitted a report in Annex L, Chairperson, and the delays are explicitly explained by the presiding officer from page 3 to page 10 of what conspired that led to this delay. But nonetheless, on the 15th of June 2011, both the employer and the employee were expected to submit in writing to the presiding officer evidence in aggravation or mitigation of the sentence. And then Mrs. Kosi has since then asked for extension, and that was granted. And we have already submitted our aggravation out of the sentence. And the presiding officer has made an undertaking that he would pass the sentence in the next coming 2 days, which is on the 24th of June. And due to the seriousness of the allegations, the board is requesting for a sanction of dismissal. I can only emphasize, Chairperson, here that the suspension of the CEO, in actual fact, yes, did bring some challenges for us, because my understanding would be a person who is acting really, even the staff would have it. Will have a problem in really taking his instructions. But nonetheless, we have done our best in improving the situation at PENSAP during the suspension. We have also, as the board, tried to speak to the acting CEO to say, the CEO to say, really, why can't we sell? But he couldn't, you know, agree. And then we have to take this long process until this juncture. I would also want to point out that There was a time where also which was raised the issue that was raised by the CEO that the board was not legally constituted, and that also delayed the proceedings. But from time to time, the employee submitted a sick certificate to excuse herself from attending the course. And at one stage, even his legal representative also submitted such. So this is the cause that led to this process of Mrs. Nkosi to take such a long time. It took about 2 years. And I want to point out, Chair, that this also had very serious implication, financial implication. And we have spent more than 2 million to that regard. But we are happy and confident that by the 24th, judgment will come out, because the chairperson, the presiding officer had found the CEO guilty on all charges. Thank you, Chair. I would now hand over to the acting CEO to look at administration issues, and he will also address the issues raised by Advocate Fanny.
Thank you, Chair, and honorable committee members. The chairperson has requested that I present on the administration of the organization. He has also asked that I emphasize and clarify the point made under legislation, that we are in conversation with the department, and we have requested that it be an inclusive process together with the Office of the Speaker, that we look at all other reports in relation to the issue of whether PENSALP is a constitutional entity, is a constitutional institution, or it is an entity. It is our view that as legislation stands, it is a very important constitutional institution in the founding provisions of the Constitution, and that in terms of the PFMA, subsection 2A and B read together with the Treasury regulation, as things stand, it reports to Parliament. We're saying, however, the grey areas between the Act and the Constitution, which is the supreme law, and the PFMA that supersedes all other Acts, needs to be looked at, and that we agreed at a common ground. And if that means we must amend the PENSALP Act, then we go that route. But certainly there are a number of acts that needs to be considered. It would not only be the PENSALP Act. I thought I should add that aspect. But the chairperson is correct that we have a PENSALP organizational strategy, which is something that was not there 3 years ago. We have developed a strategy, and together with it is an annual business plan, so that it is not the CEO who drives the board. It is the board that drives the CEO, that says, here is an annual business plan. Go deliver this plan, report to us quarterly. And the essence of the budget committee of the board as well is to say, in delivering this strategy, here is the budget that we are giving you. Report to us quarterly. And that has happened consistently. We would not go to the programs and sub-programs except to say that this is how PENSALP is configured at the moment. And it is configured according to the SMART principles of strategic development, that you have got to have programs and sub-programs. More importantly for us is what the chairperson indicated when it comes to program 2, which is the creation of conditions for the development of languages and use of languages, that these are structures that we operate through. And the role of the provincial offices within this is to act as administrative centers of the organization. And this was as a result of a recommendation that was made when we appeared at SCOPA some years back, that PENSALP cannot be coordinated from head office. It has got to have provincial representation. And this has assisted us quite a lot in liaising and in creating partnerships with provincial departments of government. In fact, if you look at our programs, we've presented our strategy and annual report previously here, you would see that there is not a single event that we do not do with the Department of Arts and Culture and, of course, other departments at provincial level. Given our financial conditions, we would not have been able to present programs at the provincial level without the involvement of, and partnership of other government departments. I will speak later to the role of the NLUs, the PLCs, and the NLBs. Now, as the chairperson has said, we've got these three structures, PLCs in each province, NLBs for each language. Please note, members, that we have got 13 NLBs because the Act requires that we also deal with the Khoi and Sign languages and South African Sign Language. So we've got additional NLBs for the Khoi and Sign languages and for South African Sign Language. The units in terms of our Act are funded by PENSALP and are accountable to PENSALP. And we have been able to properly allocate these units to be the NLUs and the PLCs to be coordinated by the provincial offices. Now, the NLUs cannot be coordinated by the provincial offices because they are Section 21 companies that have got their own BODs, their own staff, and their own administration. Now, for the provincial language committees, in terms of the norms and rules, each PLC has got 13 members. And these are appointed in conjunction with the MECs for Arts and Culture in each of the provinces. And they are advisory committee to PENSALP on language matters, but they also assist the provinces and advise the MEC on language policy matters in the provinces. They also, our structure, assist us in monitoring language policy development and linguistic human rights violation. And let me indicate that PENSALP works with all municipalities in the country. So it is our responsibility to ensure that municipalities have language policies. They budget for this, they have language units as well, and that they budget. Over the past few years, we have gone beyond that mandate of just monitoring that. We have also assisted these municipalities to develop these language policies. These structures, the PLC, meet four times a year, and they are paid a sitting fee of 585.65 per meeting. That is the current sitting fee. And we are responsible also for their traveling and accommodation expenses. Now, with the funding problems we have had, it has been difficult for these structures to meet as required by the Act. Let's also indicate that one of the challenges, which is why we really appreciate people serving in these structures, because these are academics, these are people who are committed to languages. The sitting fee there means if they meet over 3 days or 2 days, they still get that 580 something. They don't get 508 something for every day. They get that 580 something as a sitting fee throughout the meeting, even if it's for 3 days. So it's actually a sacrifice, and we do not have a competitive edge over any other institution that wants to use the expertise of these colleagues. So it's really a commitment that makes them still serve PENSALP in these structures. And they are appointed for a period of 5 years. They are not full-time employees of PENSALP, but as you can see, we have an obligation in coordinating them and paying for their expenses. We have listed their chairpersons there, and the number of members, I would not get into that. NLBs, it is the same thing. They conduct research on language matters. There are 13 NLBs, and they've got 25 members each. And they meet four times a year. The same responsibilities are there. They too get the same sitting fee, so the challenges are the same. Now, members should note that we have listed the complete complement of what these structures should look like. There are instances where you would find out because of certain challenges, certain members have resigned and so on. So where a structure would not have that full complement of 25 people. Hence, you would now find a difference between the 552 we had previously indicated and the 700 and something that we are now indicating in our presentation. And here are the chairpersons of these structures, and this is how they are configured. So we have got a total number of 325 people we're serving in the national language bodies only. The National Lexicography Unit, Section 21 companies as per our Act, and they develop dictionaries. They've got their own boards that are appointed and accountable to the principal board, and they are housed at universities and colleges through MOU agreements between the three parties. They are also funded by PENSAL, and they are experiencing the same financial constraints that we are experiencing. Equally, when we turned the organization around from a disclaimer of audit opinion to unqualified audit opinions, NLUs had the same challenges as us. So we had to put some control measures. And today we can report that they too, for the past two financial years, have had clean audit reports. And they also have their own auditors. They are run by an editor-in-chief who is appointed by their boards and not by PENSAL. They are very understaffed as well. They have got four members each to conduct this process. And these are their chairpersons as listed in the presentation. We just thought we should highlight the key achievements of these structures and challenges. And as we have indicated, the PLCs have held many workshops with municipalities assisting them. Consistently, they have celebrated important days in our country in the form of projects, meeting with communities, international days such as International Mother Tongue, International Translation Day, celebrating Deaf Awareness Week, and so on. And part of the challenges is that we underfunding, as we indicated, the low sitting fee. But another challenge we're experiencing is because we appoint these members in conjunction with the MECs. So when the MECs change, or when they are reshuffled, you have got to start at the beginning explaining the processes and having a common understanding. So that's a bit of a challenge. The absence of provincial language acts and in some provinces' language policies is also making it difficult for the PLCs to monitor, because you've got to monitor within the ambit of an existing act of a province or a language policy of a province. Also that the provinces are very vast. PENSAL previously mooted the idea of having language inspectors, because Parliament expects a report to us. When you are asked tomorrow how many municipalities in this country have got language policies, you've got to answer that. But it's difficult for 13 people to deal comprehensively with a province. The other challenge which I think we need to indicate is that English still dominates government business, including Parliament, unfortunately, and this is a challenge to the provision of the Constitution in terms of multilingualism. NLBs, it's the same challenges. I will not repeat the challenges, except that with NLBs it is different, because they deal with the verification and authentication of terminology. Even though the Act prescribes four meetings, in the reality of doing the business, when people submit their terms, you need to immediately convene the substructures of the NLB and so on, in order for them to verify and authenticate the terminology. As things stand, that's a bit of a challenge because we are not as responsive as we should be because of the financial challenges. So that's how they are more affected in terms of meetings than other structures. We have listed our working relations that we have verified and authenticated, put on terms from the Department of Arts and Culture, statistical terms from Statistic SA, the banks as well. The reason you would have in your ATMs different languages, it is because this is the group of people that verifies and authenticates terminology. Even with Microsoft bringing about five languages of the indigenous languages of this country into their platform has been the work of these colleagues. They also established reading class to encourage the culture of reading. I'm going to quickly deal with the National Lexicography Unit. That all these units have been able to produce monolingual and bilingual dictionaries. We just have a challenge with the Sesotho NLU, which has not completed the process of their dictionary development. We are engaging that. But even in their founding legislation, which is as it was identified, that dictionary development is a very long process that can take up to 10 years, depending on your strategy of doing it. Others have waited until they have a comprehensive dictionary. Others that have more resources have been able to release volumes in terms of the different alphabets that they have completed. The other challenges with NLUs is that, which is a legislative challenge, is that even though they are Section 21 companies and they run separate from PANSAL, they've got their own PODs. The Auditor General requires that we integrate our financial statements and our reporting. It has been a challenge because if it means one NLU has a qualification, it affects our overall reporting. But we have dealt with the AG, we have done the best we can in assisting them in administering their affairs, even though it's difficult because of the fact that they are companies. Even our auditing standards are different. So we're really in a compromise position here. PANSAL organizational structure number 11 and staffing. I think that the person has already spoken about the approval of the structure and that we are implementing the structure. But also to indicate that PANSAL has now been reconfigured into business plans for proper coordination and delivery. You would now have corporate services. You would have the languages business unit and the CFO's business unit. And we're really grateful to the board to having approved such an efficient structure that assists us for proper reporting. Now we're saying PANSAL has 70 employees out of a possible 112. That is a 38% vacancy rate. Now, inclusive of this is the personnel that we are coordinating from the NLBs and NLUs, which is about 734 people. Now, this vacancy rate is quite high, but even more problematic because some of the vacancies are in the critical delivery components of our organization. For instance, if you look for the language business unit, is the one that must deliver on the core mandate of PANSAL. Now, if you look at that, you do not have somebody who oversees translation and interpreting. You do not have somebody or anybody in the research unit. You do not have anybody in the status language planning unit. And these are people through which the NLBs are advised. We coordinate. So the languages business unit is very lean. That is the major concern that we have. So in terms of the new structure, I then have had to appoint an acting executive head for languages and an acting executive head for the business unit for corporate services because we would already have the CFO for the other business units. This is just a highlight of how the high-level structure is. I must indicate we have attached the entire structure. Chairperson, it is quite important to indicate the progress we have made from a disclaimer of opinion with a processes that have been indicated by the chairperson for which the previous CEO has been suspended. It's not my competence to speak on that matter. But we have changed things around and we have reported to this committee before that not only do we have unqualified audit opinions, but the Auditor General, and we have attached this report, the Auditor General expresses an opinion that there has been no mismanagement of funds at Pensalp, and there has been no transgression with regard to supply chain processes, and that there has been no irregular expenditure in the Language Board for the past two audits. These are expressed. And I'm making this point because we're not only relying on the unqualified audit opinion, but we're relying on the content of the audit that expresses itself to issues of financial management, irregular expenditure, and supply chain processes. So we're quite happy that we have achieved this process. It is important for us to also mention that we, last year, as we indicated, that we were shortlisted as one of the top performing agencies of government by the National Business Awards. Tomorrow we are attending again together with the chairperson because once again we have been shortlisted in the National Business Award in the top three of the performing agencies of government. The chairperson has spoken about the new structure giving us the Executive Management Committee, which is a committee that assists the CEO in running the organization. We have developed all corporate governance charters for this structure going downwards. The Executive Management meets once a month. It assists the CEO, and when it is necessary to do so, it meets. So we have got our corporate governance processes in order. Policies. The AG reports also report now that Pensalp has developed all its policies and is accordingly acting according to what it should be. All our processes are in place. We have developed annual operational plans because it does not end with the business plan. The manner in which the staff and management must deliver is through annual operational plans, annual business plans. We have also performance contracts, which are all the things 3 years ago we did not have. We have created job profiles for everybody in the organization. We have a performance management policy. We now assess our staff accordingly. I now want to deal with the allegations. Okay, the chairperson is proposing, with your permission, that we perhaps jump this aspect, deal with the other matters, and then come back to it. Thank you, Chair. Brin, can you deal with funding, budget, and expenditure?
Thank you. Thank you. Item number 13, that's the funding, budget, and expenditure. Funding, budget allocation plans, and budget allocation. I'll just come first before we present that in terms of the Pensalp is one of the public institutions which is under constitution. Under Section 40, we comply with the PFMA, we comply with the Treasury regulations, we comply with the Pensalp Act, that is derived our mandate. We comply with corporate governance, because corporate governance is a certain issue that I mentioned, especially Section 1 to Section 14 of the Treasury of the corporate governance. We also comply with GRAP, which was emanated in 2009. That is where we comply. Item number one, we say in 2008-2009 financial year, Pensalp requested an amount of 151 million to deliver on its mandate, but it received only 43,600,000. Chairperson, if I can mention, that 151 was also presented in the portfolio committee in 2008, during the year 2008, and we were promised that there will be funding that will come in. In 2009-2010 financial year, Pensalp requested an amount of 167, but it received only 47,556,000. In 2010, 2011, Pensalp requested an amount of 173 million, but it received only 52 million. So all this indicate that PenSalp has been budget shortfall at the beginning of the year. In order to align the strategic plan which is approved by the board, it should be aligned with the annual operation plan, with the baseline budget that we had. But if now the operation plan, they come versus the budget, so we've got a shortfall of, in the next 3 years, we already had a projection that for the first, for the 153, we had a shortfall of 121 million, 173, we had a shortfall of 134 and 150 in the future projection in the next 3 years. The budget fall is 52,871,000 allocated to PenSalp in the past financial year is below the 173,330 that the organization requested. This situation resulted in the suspension of all projects and programs. We anticipate that the new financial year 2012-2011 would be worse than the previous year because the grant has not been improved to meet our requirements to deliver. Because of the insufficient grant organization is facing a serious deficit. You can say serious deficit or a shortfall of 227%, which is 121 million. If you go that against 173 versus 52 million that received, it's 121. That was a budget for shortfall. For the past 12 years, PenSalp has been operating under deficit. You'll see an extra O. If Chairperson, you look at the at that annexure, the PenSalp budget has been increased only by 5%, and if you look, the operation has been increasing by 15.5%, increasing by 10%, but the PenSalp has been receiving only the grant by 5%, which was not matching on that. Even if you look, Chairperson, in the financial statement which was presented in this parliament the past years, the 2007-2008, PenSalp has reported on their financial statement, which is audited, that it had a deficit of 3 million and it had a liquid which was going down at that time, Chairperson, in 2007-2008. It was already below the 10%. And if you look the same year, Chairperson, the PenSalp had a solvency, because before the organization becomes insolvent, it started to be solvent. So at that time, the solvency of the organization was also going down, but there was no action that was taken to fund the organization. If you look also 2008-2009 financial year, which is also a Thursday, the organization, the deficit was also going down at the 4,000,016, but the liquidity also of that one there was also going down, and the solvency was at 1%. If you look at the 2009-2010, the deficit was keep on growing in this organization, giving a 6 million a year, and the liquid was also going down at 1.7%. The solvency of the organization was at 1, which was already that time was indicating a point of insolvency because of underfunding. That was also alluded by the AG, Auditor General, when they were auditing the financials of 2009-2010, where they indicated that there's a growing concern in this organization. Somebody must come and inject this organization. Otherwise, this organization is going down. If you look at the 2010, that financial statement is attached there, but it's still audited also. That financial 2010-2011, this PenSalp deficit goes down again. It goes to 9.5 million, so it was already insolvent. If you look at 2011, what solvent means, Chairperson? Insolvent means the total liabilities are less than your total assets, which means in future you'll be unable to meet your obligations. So, but this was a warning sign in the financial statement that we presented here and was audited all the years. Over the year, PenSalp language body has been suspending the project due to the funding, because now, if you started budgeting at the beginning of the year, you intended to budget amount of 173, but you got only 52. Obviously, during the year, you are going to have a problem of shortfall, and then you have to suspend some of the project. When you suspend the project, you look at the fixed cost or variable cost. The fixed cost, you can't suspend them. Things like rental, things like salaries of employees. The best way is go and look the variable cost. To look only a variable cost, Chairperson, would be on the project, because the government system is using the zero-based budget, which is looking at the project that the project already have this year until the following year. So the only option is to look and reduce your variable cost. So that is why every year PenSalp has doing that a shifting of environment in terms of Section 43 because of underfunding. All risk report also, if you look at the risk report that already Chair alluded, is a first five risk at Penzance. They say this Penzance is underfunded and this organization might go out. In terms of total spending out of that 53 million chairperson, Penzance is spending 52% on administration. That is the rentals. The rentals, we've got nine provinces that were renting. And these rentals are increasing by 15.5%. We are paying also the photocopy machine that we are running to run all these offices and head office. And these offices are running also over by 10%. But Penzance is only receiving 5%, which is not in line with that. The salary increase, if you look at the salary increase of the a year before, it increased more than 10%. But Penzance has been receiving only 5%. Last year, the salaries increased by 7.5% last year. But Penzance was also receiving only 5%. So you can see that the Penzance is not. That's why Auditor General end up saying this organization, the increased such funding of this institution is not based on inflation. For the 2012-2010 April, where the Penzance standing at the moment, if you look at Penzance, where Penzance is standing at the moment from 1st April to 31st of May, the past 2 months, Penzance is spending at a 25% expenditure, which means, Chairperson, Penzance by October will go down because of the underfunding. And that was indicated. What Penzance now is happening, if the employee leaves at Penzance, is a benefit to Penzance so that they don't replace another person. They need to pay other things that they have there. So that is the situation at Penzance. I was just highlighted that an extra boom to person. It is a historical that Penzance has been grossly underfunded. This is also contained in the Auditor General report where the issue of going concern was raised. The Auditor General attributed to a growing concern to underfunding and not any corruption. If in Parliament, through the Deputy Speaker, in its communication with the Minister of Arts and Culture, indicated, recognized the underfunding and further requested intervention of 26 million from the Department of Culture for the remaining 2010. Chairperson, here we had the some officials that are coming from the Speaker's office. They wanted to check in terms of finances there at that time. I think it was October last year. And then we sat down with them, and then they look, and then definitely they agreed that definitely we are going to make something because this organization can't finish the end of the financial year. Unfortunately, we didn't get anything. In 2008, a Penzance wrote to Treasury during the MTF processes, requesting an additional funding of 57 million. Remember, that was in 2008. We've got attachment also in Tuesday that we wrote together. So we have been going left and right about underfunding. But to say Penzance is corrupt is another issue. But the funding problem, for the past 12 years, if you look at this organization, it has been underfunded. When you go to Treasury in terms of the PFMA, in terms of the MTF, they will say, okay, when we go to present, we present for the Penzance as a constitutional institution for funding for the period of 3 years. They will say, you are a constitutional institution, you are not a department, and you are not a public entity. But in terms of the PFMA, it says you are reporting to Parliament. But at the moment, nobody comes in Parliament and says, definitely, this is where you can put your problems. So the issue of funding, Chairperson, has been a problem at Penzance quite for a long time. I thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. If you should allow us in absentia, then we would continue just to finish the presentation and to attend now to Advocate Fanny. And then we'll wait for her to come back. Mm. Thank you.
Wait for me.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair. As I look at the annexure, I do want to say what Mr. Bellini has presented is very important, that our problems are due to historic underfunding and all institutions that have come to evaluate us point to that. They are not due to any form of corruption. I now request that we go to annexure N. Because it's important our response is annexed in annexure N. Is there anybody who has not found it?
Page 46 in app.
Thank you, Chair. We were just waiting for the colleague to give a presentation over, or we should continue. Thank you very much, ma'am. Perhaps to give a historic context to some of the problems we have had with this employee, or even before that these allegations are not new in front of this house, except for last week, the last time we appeared in Parliament, it was to address the very same allegations. And those members who were here would recall how satisfied they were with our response to these allegations. But subsequent to that, the advocate has then submitted a fresh letter indicating certain things, and also that a court order had ordered that we, and a court of law had ordered that we reinstate him. So we briefly want to deal with that. It's important to indicate that Advocate Feni was an employee of organization as head of legal services. And at which point in time did the relationship between Pensalb and Advocate Feni become a bit sour? Now, we have attached some of his applications in court wherein he himself alludes to this, that we started having problems with the said advocate when the board approved the new structure of the organization, and I was then mandated to appoint the acting executive head for corporate services and the acting executive head for languages. Now, I appointed Mr. Sibusiso Sonkosi as acting executive head for corporate services. Advocate Feni then wrote to the board at that point to indicate that I did not have the authority as acting CEO to appoint acting executive head. A day later, he wrote again to the board to say, in fact, I should have appointed him. He is more qualified than the person who has been appointed. Now, me and you know that when you appoint acting people, you do so by your prerogative, and that there are no issues of qualifications. You can't come from a legal unit, I appoint somebody from the communication unit, and you say you are more qualified. It doesn't exist that way. But it went on, and when the board was looking at this, he requested that the board investigate this. When the board was looking at this, our HR manager got a call from somebody he alleges was a white male who was then whistleblowing that the acting CEO does not have qualifications. Immediately after that call, Advocate Feni called the HR manager to say, why are you refusing to deal with this matter that has been reported? Subsequently, anonymous emails were written to the board.
Sorry, Mr. Sopio, another story? Chairperson, sorry, Chair. I don't know whether it's because I'm so
from the old school. But I think we are bombarded with such a lot of information. Can't we end up somewhere and ask questions and then we proceed?
I think we're not so sorry, we will, but we'll let us allow him to finish because these are some of the things that we call them for, to this portfolio committee, so that they can clarify them on that basis.
Yes, I do agree, Chairperson, without causing a dialogue here.
Can we just allow them to finish?
Yeah, if they can finish, if there's anything else, really, I think we've got enough to chew now, and then they will proceed again.
I think on this matter, it's very important because this is one of the matters that is sitting on the table because of the court papers of the issue of can we just allow them to go through? Can continue?
Thank you, Chairperson. And this is just on the factual information. The board then received anonymous letters to the effect that its acting CEO did not have qualifications and that it must investigate. And as the board was dealing with that, Advocate Fanny came out clear that these were from him and so on and so on. He insisted on a forensic investigation. The board conducted that forensic investigation through the Forensic Investigation Unit of PwC. And these allegations which have been brought to the portfolio committee were part of that. And the report is attached. The PwC clarified the issue of the appointments. It found nothing wrong with them. It made its own investigation and brought about a comprehensive investigative report on the qualifications of the acting CEO and confirmed that the acting CEO indeed had these qualifications. Subsequent to that report being submitted to both the board and Advocate Fanny, communications went to Scopa, still insisting that there has been the acting CEO does not have qualification. Also now dealing with the board and its reluctance to investigate. Now in the presence of the report, it was very clear that this was malicious. And we also got hold of information from our system that Advocate Fanny had conducted through LexisNexis an investigation on the qualifications of the CEO and that he had read this report at a particular time. That confirms that the university has confirmed that acting CEO. So his acts thereafter were purely malicious in our view. This is partly what led to him being charged. Chair, I jumped to the fact that he was then dismissed. I'm not going to deal with the disciplinary hearing. And in the process of the hearing, he did not want to attend. It went to court, wanting an urgent court interdict. He did not get that. He lost that. I want to summarize really that we have had more than 6 cases against Advocate Finn, and he has lost those matters with cost, which we must still recover from him. So we view some of the allegations as a preparation to deal with those, with the recovery of those costs once we engage him. The document that he has submitted ordering us to reinstate him was indeed a court order. After Advocate Fanny had wrongly served his application to go to court on the employer and gave it to HR instead of the attorneys of record. So we were not represented in court. We were not aware that court was sitting on that particular day. So the matter was unopposed. Hence the judge gave him his pleas. On the day we received the order, we wrote to his lawyer to indicate that we are applying for rescission of this judgment. We were not there, and we did not know that this would be sitting. And the lawyers confirmed to have received this information, but the lawyer also informed us that, well, I have no guarantee that he will not rock up there tomorrow because I have no control over him. And you and I know that even after a judgment, there is a number of days for you to consider the judgment. It does not automatically mean you rock up there the next day. But nonetheless, knowing him, we wrote to his lawyers to indicate that we're applying for rescission. He nonetheless rocked up, and HR then indicated to him that there is this letter. And then he left. The next day we were served with papers to the effect that we are in contempt of God, which is what is put here as well in the committee, in the letter. We went to court to indicate these people were wrongly served. We are in the process of applying for rescission, and the court ruled in our favor. And again, it ruled with cost. And all those things are attached here. So as we stand, he is not coming back to the organization, not because I am refusing him to go back there, but because there is a matter subject to decay, which makes it at times very difficult to discuss matters here, because even the matters we discuss here, he gets hold of and uses in his affidavits against the organization. So the matter is subject to decay. It is not us who are saying he should not come back. There is a matter in court. We have dealt with the other issues as well, which I don't want to go through at the moment, except that there are no financial irregularities. All the reports that we have attached express themselves to that effect. There has also been no executive committee of the board that has decided that he must be fired. The other difficulty, we are responding to allegations that are not substantiated. There's an allegation here, and this chairperson and the committee has a direct bearing on my integrity as well. When I read in the media that I have a relationship with a person in the audit committee, that's why Pennsylvania is receiving unqualified audit opinions. And I'm in the process of instituting my own claim of defamation against Advocate Vinny. I am also aware that Ramulifo Incorporation is doing the same. And whenever Advocate Vinny lost these cases, he had reported the judges to the Chief Justice. Even the lawyers who are representing us are reported to the bar. They've got matters. That is whenever he has lost this case. You and I know audit processes cannot favor you because you have a relationship, let alone that I don't have it. But even if I were to have it, it will not favor the organization. So to leave it at that, that for us, these are merely rumors that are meant to tarnish the image of our organization and its board. I want to deal with the issue of salary payments. It's important that we deal with that. There's an allegation that whenever I am broke, I ask the finance manager to pay salaries. We deal extensively with that here, that the payment of salary process and cannot be a process of instruction and pressing a button for payment. It's a comprehensive process that starts at HR. You've got to calculate medical aid. It takes a very long time. You've got to go to finance for verification on a number of issues, staff payments, a number of things. It goes to the CFO. It goes to conferences. It goes to the CFO. We have outlined that. So it cannot be true. Not even another person. There is no CEO who can just say to the finance manager, pay salaries, and they are paid instantly. The process does not go that way. We have dealt with all these matters. There's a last matter, that of Mr. Simelan, who is an employee, who was our employee in KwaZulu-Natal. It has been cited here to prove that we have got these matters, that we don't bring back people when court orders are given. Mr. Simelan was dismissed through a hearing. He went to the CCMA in Durban. He won. We were of the same view that the CCMA erred in its judgment. It did not consider a number of things. And as an overture, I went to Durban to request him to come and start work the very next Tuesday on a clean slate. He refused this. This is on record. He refused this, making demands that I could not meet because I knew that the CCMA erred in this matter. I indicated to him, if we're not in agreement, we would review the matter. And we have done that. And the matter is being delayed in this review because the CCMA has all of a sudden lost all the tapes that I record. of this nature. So that is what the labor court is dealing with. Honorable Chair, that is where we want to rest it for now. And thank you very much for the opportunity to clarify ourselves.
Okay, thank you to the council. Honorable members and guests, before we ask questions, can I just give you 10 minutes? I can sit below. 10 minutes just to refresh, breathe, bathroom, and then we can come back immediately. 10 minutes, please. Please. There's still refreshments outside, tea, coffee, and yeah. That's just the two issues what I think she should have.
Yeah.
Hello. Brenda.
Okay. Thank you.
Ay,
It's another thing. You can't even go through. In a very speed. I figured Jiva will sell and do it once. He was so busy, Jim.
I'm going to go to the next one.
Honorable members and guests, I know you all want coffee and tea. What I've requested is that Siki must go to the kitchen to get you coffee and hot coffee and water. But that cannot keep us not to continue with our work. If they come, they'll just bring it inside. You'll just move slowly and get your coffee, Master. Honorable members and guests, as you all heard the presentation from Pantalp, we have our questions time now. But the gentleman from PMG asked that please speak to the mic and speak. Is that what? Okay, again, to tell her quickly, everybody, just to pour coffee and tea so you can sit down. Another lenient 3 minutes of coffee and tea. And if I phone book, you don't want it anymore. There's coffee and tea.
The passage is so small, you must see.
No, it's inside now. That's why I'm looking at you, because we're fighting about this coffee now. Just 3 minutes to get your cup and sit down. And I'm a lottery. That's coffee. Oh, sorry.
Don't give your pretend.
Sinaqala master.
Hayi, asina umisa umsebenzi.
Hlala ke baza kwenza lo sick. Hlala phansi.
Andibathembe.
Okay. If you want coffee or tea, Siki, just raise your hand. Siki will bring it for you so that we don't have a lot of movement. If you want coffee or tea, Siki, can I just make you a waiter for the day, please, so that the room is small. Members, as I said, that the presentation has been made by Pencil. Thank you, Dr. Maliti, and your team. It's our time now. I won't be the first to start, but I just want to highlight one or two issues from the presentation. And I remember in front of you there's a letter, I've made copies for you, a letter that was written by Pencil to the President of the Republic of South Africa. I think I should just note and raise a concern that on paragraph 3, he says we have on numerous occasions approached the Portfolio Committee on Arts and Culture about this impending financial crisis, and the response has been consistent that the Minister of Culture will be approached further, fueling the confusion. And then from my side, as a chairperson of this portfolio committee and the portfolio committee members, for the past 8 months that I've been a chair, I've never had any letter coming to me from Pencil. Advocate, I should make it clear. No letter, no communication, nothing. The only time I was the first one to request Pencil to come here and to also, and I was the first to consult Pencil because of pending issues. So nothing came to me. I think, I'm not sure which portfolio, maybe the previous one, I'm not sure. Maybe honorable members, do you know about it, Master?
Yeah.
Okay, without time, I just wanted to make that it made me as a chair. There's nothing. I would have intervened if there was something that came, if it was a real financial crisis. But I think the first question now, what will the biggest chair done? I just want to clear myself from this one and this portfolio committee, because we've never even discussed in the committee. There was nothing of this nature that came. But also, as you respond as well, as you write to the letter to the President of the Republic, did you write to the Speaker of Parliament or just a slight indication before you go to the President, because there are other constitutional structures as well before going to the higher level of state? I'm very worried about me, because if it went to the Speaker, I'm not sure it would have came back to me, but to the highest office, what about other constitutional structures? Maybe it would have been. But also I want to highlight from the reading of the report, I think the tone, let me just say that as much as there are flaws or clear responsibilities. At the end of the day, the Minister of Arts and Culture, it seems that there's no, you don't want this relationship with the Minister of the Arts and Culture, but there's no choice because the same law that we're speaking about says that the Minister appoints the boards of PANSALP. Members, the Minister appoints the board of PANSALP, and he can also fire them. And also, secondly, the same Minister is the one that comes to the budget vote and even speaks about the budget vote of PANSALP. So I think those are issues that I should be note before members. Can I note hands? Honorable Lotret, Honorable Moss, Baunchitela, Mastori, Honorable Mushwana, and Tete Mabunda. You can start.
Thank you, Chair. Mine's going to be a mixture of questions and comments mostly. And although I have a number of them, I'm going to classify them into three groups, basically. And the first one has to do with the legal aspects. And I think that is something, Chair, that this committee will have to seriously consider, because I fully agree with the fact, and also as has been indicated in the presentation, that there are some points of confusion, and specifically where this body reports to. And I know from the Act it is not the Department of Arts and Culture. So we do have a bit of a problem there, and I think that is something we need to sort out. But in the same time, I would also perhaps, Chair, want to have us consider the whole language promotion and protection mandate in the Constitution, because we have PANSALP, then we have the Commission for the Protection and Promotion of Cultural, Religious and Linguistic Rights. Now, to me, there's a bit of an overlap, and somehow I think the legislatures at the time did not foresee this to happen. Mm-hmm. And added to that, you also, to my mind, have an overlap with functions with the department itself in terms of the promotion of language. So I think, Chair, as on a macro level, as portfolio committee, we should really investigate the two bodies plus the department, look at their mandates and see whether we can't streamline it, because then we will have less confusion and financial problems. Then concerning the funding, yes, I know, and I see also here for years, PANSALP has been asking for additional funding. And they have quite extensively made the point that there's no corruption, etc., etc. But I think what bothers me, and this is also then in terms of a question, if I look at the business plans here, it's extremely difficult to judge what the costing of that business plan is going to be. So to say I need another how many million, based on what? Only based on the deficit that we might be running into, or is it actual cost that has been done on a scientific basis, that this is my business plan? Because I have to say also here to the acting CEO and Dr. Malete, I'm a bit worried about the business plans and the strategic plans, because it's very much the same thing over and over: develop a framework, implement the framework, monitor the framework, with very little substance in it. So we don't know what's really going to happen. So I think it's extremely difficult for PANSALP to request additional funding if there's no supporting financial budgets, projects, whatever. And then lastly, no, I think I'll leave it up to there. So my point's mainly then, Chair, the question of the overarching legal framework plus the mandates, looking at the different structures and then the business plans and budgets.
And thank you, Honourable Moss.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, congrats what you be elected on the leadership of the UCLIC. I forgot to say that. I want first to come to the letter. I see the letter did note that they did send a copy to the Deputy Speaker of Parliament. So therefore, Chair, I think they're supposed to move forward to the portfolio committee. On the issue of the finance, I think Dr. Lotrit already touching it. So the previous years, 2009-2010, they said they was not actually receiving the allocation that they replied towards. But my question will be, on that time, was there a straight plan for the application? Because I saw your start plan starting in the next years, for the 3 years. Because then, actually, we're supposed to getting a breakdown towards your application. What is the application talking towards? I think as the portfolio committee, we must know exactly. Because if we go to do a budget vote, we streamline what we want must happen in the different entities. So I really get, maybe you must tell, because some of us, as the chairperson already say, she's there for 8 months. But some of us came after that. Although the previous members was in the previous third term in this portfolio committee. So also to come to the issue of your vacancies. I see if you are appointed a CEO or an acting CEO, if you don't have the support staff, how will you make sure that really you will achieve on the end of the day you want to achieve? And I think if it is according to the budget that you can't afford to appoint those people, then we must tell us here today. Because really, it's all of us outside, in the communities outside, really want, that they really want to, that we must empower them in their own mother tongue. So I really want to highlight those issues. I will come back say, well, as we move forward, because there's some questions I want to ask.
And I want to tell you.
Inyaniso into yokokuba uxa wam ebekile ngokucacileyo umcimbi womthetho nendlela ekuba bakufuna kunanyathelwe kuyo kum ingathi ngumba wokuqala before sithethe nayiphi into ukuze siqonde kakuhle ukuba sinelungelo lokwenza eyiphi into, sinelungelo lokungenzi eyiphi into. Ingathi kanti senza nje favor enyanisweni thina okanye nabo basenzela ifavor ngokuzapha. Funeka icaciso lomthetho uthatha lelo mcimbi ndiwucele, Madam Chair, ukuba siwudlulise further ngokuba sithi ukuba ngaba kukhona i-legal team isincedise. Isincedise kulo mba sikwazi uba clear, sikwazi ukuqhuba siye phambili ngeminye imicimbi. Ngokugqibela ke kwangoku ulo omalunga ne-organogram noko bendiyifuna ingcaciso ebhetelana phaya, kuba naxa ibonakala nje idwetyiwe apha kaloku kukho umba onento okwenza nekomiti ekuthiwa yi-budget committee, iyabekwa ke kodwa apha kule organogram ayikho, iyikomiti njalo. And ke kaloku xa iyikomiti ithetha uba kaloku loo nto inee-powers ezilingana nezinye ikomiti efanuba ibe yinxalenye yolu luhlulu lapho. Ndizawuphinda ndibuye.
Sorry. Chairperson, actually the previous speaker has covered me, and I had serious concerns about the presentation from 20 pages 20 to 23 on the Executive Authority Accountability and Reporting. Honorable, the two previous speakers have touched on that, because it is really not clear to us what exactly are we doing here. Since Consult has explained to us they've been coming to this committee, you know, previously. I know there were problems even previously, before I even became a member of this committee. Some of the members were there before me. They would bear me out about Consult. And I think while we get
the clarity from the legal advisors of Parliament. I just want Pansam to explain to us after that the issue on the page 30, the structures that they've got. Also, the question would be about the 21 Section 21 companies. I know they've got provincial structures such as the one that they've alluded to, that is the NLU and the NLB, but I think as a concept, they should be knowing by now what, where are we heading to and what have we done so far in terms of the mandate that they've been given. I've also read the mandate that says having to ensure the creation of a condition for development and use of all official language in South Africa with particular emphasis on previously marginalized languages. Now I want them to tell us how far are they in terms of Koi? Is it Koi? Koi language. And how do they think they are you know, improving on this? And on the Section 21, are they having a Section 21 companies complying to the mandate so far? I don't think I'm satisfied about what is happening in South Africa about the languages, really. And also on the organogram, there are positions that have appeared on the organogram. Some are vacant, there are two acting, and I just want Pansam to tell us when are they intending to fill those positions. But before they can answer this, I think the explanation that will be given to us by the legal advisors, it will give us really a strength to go forward with, because there's a lot of confusion. We can't be having sessions that are confusing, you know, following each other as Parliament and without any clarity. Thank you.
Another shot.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. And yeah, I have to echo my congratulations on the Youth League election. Having said that, I have two issues to raise. The first one, seemingly to me, I may be wrong.
Please speak to the mic, Honourable.
I guess we're seated with a relationship challenge. Mm. And I don't know how to put that, because you don't go to people and say your relationship is not okay. But I'm listening. I'm new here. But it's like there is a track record of the relationships which are not okay in this particular board. And I don't think any one of us can solve it. The board itself need to deal with that. Unless if there is something that we need to do, because you are like talking to us. That's the first thing that I wanted to highlight. It's a concern, actually. And I'm looking at it's page 36, your NLU and their chairpersons. I cannot say for sure that this gender is not balancing here, because both doctor, both prof, both doctor, I don't know whether they are male or female, those ones. But I think this one has got a lot of males. If these doctors, profs, professors and stuff are also males, we need to have something balanced, some body which is balanced. Maybe the relationships will be okay then. Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you. I think we had similar questions and concerns. I have been partly covered by my colleagues here, but what I just want to raise this. I think in their presentation, we should categorize their presentation into maybe three types or so. The first one, we'll have to look into the establishment and appointment of the board of PENSA. In terms of the legislations quoted in their presentation, it shows some, I don't have a nice word. If you are a listener to what they have been put, the way they have been putting it, you can find yourself being confused. Because the minister is there to appoint. They are not even accounting to the department per se. Constitutionally, they are a constitutional institution. And when you look again, they are, what do they call themselves, an independent organ of a state. So I think in that category, we need to look it very clear and clean for both of us as members and and portfolio committee members, and even the parliament itself. And secondly, when you look into the legal battles that we're encountering now, it tells you a lot of things. One will be asking himself or herself a question to say, how does this battle emanate? Why such legal battles within those members, within this institution? Why such? From the personal point of view, their positions and maybe they are understanding and undermining each other because of 1, 2, 3 issues, will not be knowing that unless they put it clear to us so that we know what kind of a battle are they having. It goes along with the sense that there are some funding, legal costs that is applied there. The institution has put it very clear to us that they are being underfunded. And in terms of their presentation, you can see. But you can ask yourself, who is funding those legal costs? Whereas they do not have enough funds. So all these things need to be clarified before we could even take what my colleagues have proposed, because I think that will show us a way and how to deal with these institutions in a proper way, like any other institutions that are accounting to maybe to the department and so on, so that we can be able to see how do they deliver service that they are mandated to. And then lastly, Chairperson, when you look right at the beginning there, you find out there is they have shown the current board members. If I read it correctly, it shows us this is the second board member before the first one. And therefore, maybe the suspended CEO, she was the first suspended CEO that has led to this legal battle, was in the first board, or maybe she was in this second board, so that we get the clarity on that also. Because maybe I don't read them correctly, Mrs. Ngosi, and when I check in the current board members, I don't see her maybe. And then it's just for us to know that. And then I think the whole scenario will be the categorization of of the matters that they've raised today in here, starting from the constitutional one and then the their establishment and how do they report. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Members. It's my time now. I would like to highlight that to members that the legal team of Parliament is here, the institutions of I forget to say, can I tell the officer? Office of?
Office.
Of the institutions supporting democracy, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, they are the legal team that are here. I thought after last week, with all those legal letters coming in front of us, there are certain matters that would need legal attention, legal advice. And I think at the end, when we finish, Dr. Advocate, I'll just allow you to say something so that you can also bring us on board on some of the issues as well. But from the look of it, some of the things still need to be researched. Some of the things we still have to look down, because are not things that we can take decisions on overnight. But my first question will be, okay, my first comment is to say that I know PANSALP is facing a financial crisis, but I think I must be very clear to the committee that I'm not happy that the three that we saw are the three. We are other board members, and we are senior management of PANSALP as well. You, especially critical issues of the financial CFO, if there is one, and the critical HR. And I don't think I'm happy with the three of you being here only. I wanted the whole team on board, as Parliament usually does. But secondly, thanks for the annex charges. Yes, we've gone through such, and I thought some of the issues will break them down financially, but I thought I should not make a fuss about it. So because we want to get on board about these issues. My first question then will be, is Mrs. Ngosi, the dismissed CEO, the major factor for contributing to PANSALP to being insolvent, you know? And if you speak about mismanagement of funds, how much are we speaking about here, you know, more or less, so that we can know what is it, and what, if you can just unpack lightly what corruption has been happening that she was doing that led her to be dismissed. But secondly, you say you've got an audit and a risk committee, but now I stand to be clarified here. If you have such a committee, what was their duty then, if then you fell to such a deficit of 121 million? I because that's where they see that this is a risk, this is it, we cut this project, we don't cut this project. I thought that's the second question that I must ask. Thirdly, in your presentation, I think it's page, you speak about the Karamal report at the end. And I think I'm very, if I am subject to corrected, Advocate Kajwai also, my understanding that the Parliament is still considering the report. And my understanding is that that depends on the way about that, that a Parliament is still considering the report. I thought I should just highlight it. Maybe they can also clarify why do they put on like that, as if it's something that has not been brought. From my reading, it's like the matter is no longer attended to, unless I'm reading it in understanding it in another year. And then you also mentioned that PANSALP has been, for the past 12 years, operating under a deficit. But now, how do you continue to spend with what you don't have, you know? And what intervention did the board and executive, despite the letter to the president, what intervention did the board and executive committee do on this regard? Because if we were going to such deficit, then you would need to do an intervention of some sort. On the presentation, on page 4, on the last bullet point, says that I just want to know which language communities are complaining that they are not represented on the board. Page 7 on the presentation, you say on bullet 3, the change was as necessitated by the section 6 of the act, 2 of the act, that requires an election annually. Does that put a strain on you
or do you think it must be changed? Because you're putting here as if it puts a strain, so I just want your view on that. Sorry. I think on page, my question was on page 10. But I think I've already mentioned it's about this fraud and risk management strategy. Because if it goes back to the question I asked earlier about risk, if you have this intervention, then what is happening about it? Then on page 13, bullet point number 2, I just want clarity to say that any claim or is it just a statement that principle is dysfunctional? I just want clarity on that. Is it who claims that, or are you just putting to the committee that if there are certain claims, then there is nothing like that? On page 20, I think the tone about that you are not an entity and we must not confuse with constitutional institutions. I think we are very clear about who you are, but we also acknowledge also the flaws in the laws and the legal implications that are there. I think we're very clear on that. And you say both ministers and chairpersons are accountable to parliament and not to each other. Can you just clarify that for me? If you are saying the minister and the chairperson are not accountable to each other, yes, you might go back to the law, but please clarify me on this one. Because the same chairperson is appointed by the minister. So if you come now to us and say that both the minister and the chairperson are accountable to parliament, not to each other, are you telling us that now Dr. Malesi is not accountable to Minister Mashatile as a board member? I think I must clarify it on this implication, you know. As you say that the board, you further say that the chairperson of the board has the same responsibility to the institution as a minister, to a department. I think I need clarity, or serious clarity on that one as well. I go to page 23. On bullet number 3, you say when Pansalb accounts to Parliament for the expenditure and reports, it is not through the DAC but direct communication with Parliament. The new way is therefore surprising us. I just want this new way. You further on say that it's not the funds, the environment of funds is not through the DAC but directly with Treasury. Mm-hmm. But now who represents Pansalb and Treasury? I say now Pansalb represents itself. Maybe we should just clarify that other issue. You know, so are you saying Pansalb could directly? I understand you'll raise the illegal implications as well, but I thought I should raise these issues as well. As you said, the money is a conduit. I thought I should ask these questions because when you brought the department on board, we wanted an intervention as well. Okay. On page 24, okay, you've already clarified these issues, but I think you're saying the sentence is being passed in the next 2 days. That's what you're saying. Okay, and all of the rest of us, I need to ask this question. Unfortunately, I have marked them. This is just out of concern. I'm very concerned about the dismissals. If it's corruption, I wouldn't be concerned. But I'm just concerned with this dismissal legal issues. And so I'm not sure there's an issue of personalities. It's an issue of hating each other. I've got no other way to put it. Or undermining each other. Because if for a normal person, if a person is not given a post or an acting post, those are labor relations, a normal person wouldn't go to that far as court. Maybe it's me. I just want to understand the advocate, if an issue, unless there's a real mental problem, you wouldn't go that far to waste your money to go to court and ask the advocate to judge. Just for an acting position, if it was permanent, then
it's understandable. For an acting position, you go to the High Court. I'm just making this comment maybe to ask if there are there any bossy relations or, I don't know, or authoritarian relations. That's what I want to understand. Because on one letter from, as I said, with this, some of these things, Dr. Malete, like those letters from the courts, we'll just clarify, but we'll do our research on them. It's not things that you can answer today, because we also received another letter from the advocates. I think you can get them a copy of Dr. Advocate Feni to say that you did not appear. The court is the one that we're trying to explain to us as well. I think that's where our legal team will also come in as well. And I just want to clear to give surety to point out that these committee members, including me, I don't even know Dr. Feni. We don't have any relationship. So I heard the comment when you made acting so that he knows about what happened in these meetings. I don't have any relationship with him. I don't think any committee member knows who is he talking about. But for us, it's to protect the credibility of Pansalp as well. That's why we have to attend this matter, because it came to my attention. It came to the committee attention. It's all over media. It's something that I think I should just clarify. It's not an acting on a favor of somebody else. That's why you see there is a legal team here. So these are some of the issues. They must also advise the committee on what to do. I think for now I'll pause on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. With the permission, can you excuse Mr. Osepe? I need his blood to go to the bathroom, but I'll continue with the responses, Chair. Chairperson, we will respond to the questions, and where it is relevant, I'll also ask my colleagues here to respond to the relevant issues. The first one that was raised here, Chairperson, is with regard to the letter that was written to the President. I would also like to concur with what the Chairperson has said, that probably the protocol should have been followed. But also to the fact raised by the Chairperson that who are we referring to when we are saying the matter has been raised with the Portfolio Committee on numerous occasions. Perhaps we should have indicated clearly there that also I got that information that the principal had been continuously raising the issue of underfunding. And as Mr. Mdilin have alluded to the fact, it has run over 12 years. That was the understanding, and not particularly referring to the current portfolio committee. With the protocol, yes. What happened, Chair, would admit that mistake that has been done, it was out of frustration and the urgency that we wanted this matter to be raised. It will also be important just to give a background to this. Last year, also, we raised this issue about Pencil being in a dire need of financial support. And the committee, I think Parliament sent some people or delegation to come and look at how serious the situation is. And there was also a promise that these things will be looked into. And at a later stage also, we were visited by the office of the Speaker, and we highlighted that issue. And there was also a letter that came from the Office of the Institution Supporting Democracy for the intervention. And with those, you know, the experiences that we've had, where there was, you know, little response, I would say, for the lack of a better word, out of frustration that we felt that it would be advisable then to allude to the office of the President. The Chairperson also alluded to the tone of the letter. it is our understanding that in the tone probably the chairperson was demeaning, degrading, or whatever, we'd like to apologize for that. What with the intention, therefore, was it is just for to bring PENSALP to the attention of Parliament itself in general. If I may go on to the legal aspects, I mean the issues that were raised by members, honourable members from this portfolio committee, the reporting lines, the legal teams, the mandate. I think it is correct. We've also agreed with the Department of Art and Culture that there's a need to consult with each other to iron out all those issues. Chairperson, we've raised these issues not with the spirit and the understanding of undermining anybody. We clearly indicated earlier on in our presentation that we would really would like to work with the Department of Arts and Culture. It has also been indicated by Mr. Sopit that, you know, there's this partnership at the provincial level that is working very well, and we'd like that to see that happening as well. We're just highlighting the chairperson again because there's frustration when it comes to where we go when there are problems. There are parallel processes that are taking place here. Last year in 2010, we were also invited by the speaker, and PENSALP was listed within the institution supporting democracy. And this also gives us the impression that we'll be reporting to that office as well. But in that report, it was also clearly indicated that while the Office of the Institution Supporting Democracy will be supporting these institutions, but it does not replace the Portfolio Committee. We have that understanding that the Portfolio Committee will not be replaced. The issue of funding, Chair, and I'll also give Mr. Sopu to allude to that fact. I think most of the portfolio members have raised this issue of the reporting lines. It is also confusing. But I would like to acknowledge what it has been identified as a weakness of our strategic plan and annual business plan about the costing thereof. And we will attend to that, Chairperson. And there is also little substance, and therefore it will be very difficult really to get the support, the financial support, if we didn't cost those programs. This one also refers to the letter to the President, and then the breakdown for the application that was also that has been raised. In other words, if we have to raise to apply for funds, at least the application must be very clear. Why you need this funding and how is it going to be implemented. I think that is a good pitfall that has been identified, and the board is going to respond or to rectify that. The vacancies that exist within the organogram itself, and probably we'll couple that with the organogram issue that was been raised also by honourable members here. How are we going to fill those organograms? Why have we created such structures? And if we are still having the financial problems, how are we intending to fill them in? And as well as the budget committee, I think that is also a very important question that was raised, that the budget committee, it was not clear in the presentation that the budget committee together with the executive committee are one and the same, and they perform the same function. You know, it's what happens here is that we look at the budget and make the allocations as the executive committee, but then take it to the whole members of the board for approval. But I would also give Ms. DeSoto to respond on the vacancies in the organogram, the budget as well. Up to so far, let me take it further with those responses. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair and honourable members. And I'll be touching there and there because members have asked in some instances similar questions, which we can congest together. perhaps ndibeke nje umnwe mhlekazi kule point ka sihlalo, which is about legislation. Thank you very much. Which is to speak to legislation. We have made our analysis of legislation, and indeed there are gaps, which is why we also say it is not us who are saying the chairperson and the minister do not report to each other. It is legislation, and which is why we are agreeing that we need to put our heads together and fix these grey areas. If in the end it says the board must report to the minister, and then we go that way. But it's our analysis of legislation as it currently exists, not an expression of our own desires in terms of how we want to report and where do we not want to report to. In fact, we have attached advice by the chief state law advisor, which affirms our interpretation of legislation. But the gaps are there, and they are making us suffer. So the quicker we sit around and look at the legislation and fix it, the better for PANSALP. We really appreciate that. But as well, Chairperson, the auditor had identified the issue of the costing of the business plan. But the broader concern may be, how do we arrive at the figures if we had not costed the business plan? Now, what we did was, through the operational plans of the different business units, we had then sought to attend to the matters and the gaps that are in the business plan. That's how we arrived at the meat in interpreting the business plan and also costed. So if you look at our operational plans for the different units that deliver the business plan, they are costed. But we have agreed with the auditors that in our annual review of the strategy, we've got to escalate that costing to the business plan, which is a point we agree with. But the figures that we have brought about were also scientifically arrived at through the cascading of the process through annual operational plan. It is true that we are unable to fill the vacancies that are there. Mr. Mbilini has indicated when an employee leaves, we have no choice. We can't fill the vacancies as things stand. And also the issue of the budget committee, the executive of the board, together with the executive of management, then sit to look at the budget, and the chair is right, is then escalated to the board. With regards to the Khoi and Sign languages, we have established national language bodies for both the Khoi and Sign languages, and also South African Sign Language. A lot of work has gone into the promotion of the language. We have even developed a dictionary for them, which we translated from English to Afrikaans. And that committee consists of the communities themselves. In other words, they are given an opportunity to do something about their language. But certainly, it is not going to be enough in the context of some of the challenges that we have. There's still quite a lot of work that needs to be done in assisting those communities, including South African Sign Language, when we are now working with the Minister of Basic Education to ensure that the language is in the curriculum. So there are quite a number of challenges. And also we need to be of the understanding that it is not PANSALP only, because PANSALP is an overseeing institution. It is also departments of government that are doing a lot of work around these languages. For instance, education is dealing with South African Sign Language comprehensively in bringing about South African Sign Language in the curriculum. So we work with departments on this. The Section 21 companies, I think we have listed in the presentation that all but except one have developed the products that they've been required to, the dictionaries. But I think the challenge is how they are used in the public space. Many people still do not know about them. There is not sufficient marketing of these dictionaries. And also that we are competing with the private sector. Because when we develop an isiXhosa English bilingual dictionary, it does not stop the other publishers which are doing for private business to do the same. And they've got more cloud finance and contacts with the houses that are selling these books. So these are some of the challenges. But it is only the Sesotho that is finishing its dictionary. I think there is an imperative matter we need to explain around this deficit. It may also be that we have ourselves created this confusion with our terminology. Because a question arose, you have a risk committee, but couldn't they pick up that you will have this deficit? I was also asked at some point that we're in the red with this 131 million. We are not. We would not have achieved these unqualified audit opinions if we were in the red with those amounts. So perhaps the correct terminology, even though my finance gurus are insisting that in finance language is called deficit, the correct terminology is shortfall. In other words, Pensalp has not used 131 million. It says based on our plan, in order to execute it, we need this amount, and we don't have it at the moment. So we have not used it. In fact, the audit committee has done a wonderful job in ensuring that we do not overspend and we keep to the limit of the budget. But the difficulty with that is that you do that creatively. The core business suffers, which is why we have a going concern. The core business suffers, as Mr. Mbilini said. When you have capital expenditure, you can't do anything. You've got to utilize funds, and you take those funds during environment that you can then stop a particular project. It is not a healthy situation, because if we were to be, we are audited in terms of delivery, but if the AG were to give an audit opinion on performance, we would certainly get a qualification, because our delivery is affected. In performance, which is the core languages, is affected by finance. So these are the concerns that we are raising. I also want to deal with I do want to indicate for the record that on the, because I've read the judgment extensively, Mrs. Ngosi was not charged with corruption. She was charged with financial irregularities. Now, the document in front of you, which has got all the allegations and the findings, deals with financial irregularities, which is something completely different from corruption.
Sorry, Chris.
Then,
please, can you elaborate when you say financial irregularities? What do you mean?
Financial irregularity is, for instance, just a simple example, where something was supposed to go for tender because it is beyond the threshold.
Mm.
You take it on a three-gold system. Now, that is not in accordance with the thresholds. So there are a number of those things that are there. The back payment of staff during after job grading, which is not allowed in terms of legislation, because job grading is paid a month after its approval. So it is things like those that relate to transgression of existing treasury regulations. But corruption is a different concept. Maybe lastly, and I will miss others, Chair, you will remind us, in terms of the legal costs, and I'm glad the department is here. There is no institution. That's why we have the regulations. If an employee transgresses regulations, you have no choice but to apply the regulations. But also there are acts of parliament that give rights to these employees, and we must tolerate them. They go to court, and an institution has no choice but to defend itself when there are litigations. And here we are dealing with a serial a litigator, really. So we have to defend ourselves. And fortunately, we've been proven correctly, because more than six times
it has been ruled with costs so that we are able to recover the costs that we have paid to our legal team as well from the litigant. So these are some of the challenges. But also, a question has been asked about what the real problems are, whether it's not a problem of relationships and so on. Now, if members find time to read all the affidavits by the colleague and what is requested from the court, they do not speak to any authoritarian, they do not speak to any relationship. All they speak to is that I want to be appointed in that acting position. That's what is in front of the court, that's what is being requested. So we can only interpret what the former employee wants in terms of what he writes to court. And indeed, we are also surprised that somebody can go to such lengths purely to be appointed in an acting position. And we also asked, well, until when are these people going to act? Are we planning to appoint? It is difficult. If our financial situation improves, then we certainly need to appoint, not only in the acting positions, but in the critical vacancies, particularly in languages that are suffering. The CFO is not here today. We would have wanted him to be here. His daughter is very sick, so we have excused him and he has seconded the finance manager to be here. We also have Mr. Ngosi here with us, who is part of the management executive committee. And we would have desired to bring everybody who is involved in this. The last time we came to the portfolio committee, we were asked, Chairperson, if you do not have money, why do you bring so many people? So at times it becomes a difficulty. You then shift the critical people to the issues that we will respond to. But it is our desire to bring everybody. Chair, there may be other issues that I have like the gender of the NLU. Certainly we agree it's male-dominated. It's a transformation we need to make in terms of the appointment. But the linguistic industry as well needs a transformation because it's dominated by male professors and doctors. It's not a very attractive profession. No, the chairpersons are not male, all of them. But in the main, it's male. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Super, thank you, but I'm still not convinced about the explanation that you are giving me on the CEO. Okay. I want you to enlighten, maybe now as we ask questions, you say step by step by step, how many irregularities, how much it was. You see, now it's a very critical issue that we are on. Because for a case to drag over 2 years, then it's a serious issue, you know, and there are finances to it. You see, I thought when it's financial misconduct, it's something else. I was thinking of the highest level of corruption, maybe. But now I just want to understand. And to such cases, Advocate Kocha would lead to dismissal. I'm just checking. How many times has he done it? Was the warnings or the labor relations procedures were followed? But now, on this matter, is also elaborate. Was it only dismissed or CEO? Was she the only one on these issues? Because that's obviously, she would be someone from procurement, there would be someone from finances. I think it's something that I must raise. Before I give honorable members the second round, Dr. Chogwen and your team, is there anything that you want to raise?
No, thank you, Chairperson.
Are you sure?
Not at this stage, I guess.
Legal? Nothing to raise. Okay. Can I give honorable members a second round? Honorable Lothric, Honorable Moss, Honorable Moshwana, Bounty Paila, Advocate, do you want to say something? After the questions. Can I?
After the questions.
Thank you, Chair. The Section 21 companies, or then the NLUs, I think that they are extremely important. And I almost get the sense, if one reads through your business plans and strategic objectives and so forth, that they don't really get that much attention. What is your relationship with the NLUs and specifically their chairpersons and the editors-in-chief? Because, you know, we can't develop languages and give them status if we don't have proper dictionaries. It's extremely critical that those entities actually be improved. So I'd just like to know what your kind of relationship there is. And then also just back to the legal aspects. You said that at every time that in terms of Advocate Finney that he has lost his cases, but in a document we've just received, his legal his attorneys advise us that there was a judgment on the 9th of June this year where it reaffirmed the orders it granted on the 18th of April in our client's favour. Are you aware of this? Or because then it seems to me that that was a case that he did not lose. So what is the status according to you at that on that particular point? And then thirdly, and I actually wanted to say it right with my first round of questions, when we look at your funding problems, I think much of it can go back quite a few years when the provincial offices were established. Was there any costing done? Was there any budgetary process to see whether those provincial offices will in fact be a viable option for PANSAF given their budget then? And have you since looked at that, whether those provincial offices are indeed a viable option?
Thank you, Honourable Moss.
Can I just mention my concern here? I thought after the
first, Mike Mami,
after the first leg, we are going to have the legal advisors explaining to us. That was our request.
No, Dininga, it was big. It's not going
to do us any instruction.
On
the issue, I'm coming back on the issue of the funding crisis. Say the letter is dated for what I received for Parliament is on the 22nd of June 2011. Now, when you look to the, the presentation, they're talking about also on the same issue of communication with the minister, with the president and the deputy speaker. Now, the letter of today is the 22nd of June 2011, talk also about the president and the deputy speaker. So I want, for clarity, did you reflect into the same matter of underfunding? Because the 19th of November 2010, the matter is be addressed where the minister gives 26 million rand towards 2010. But now, the letter of what I saw today was received here in front of me is dated the 22nd of June 2011. But in the back of the for the committee, actually, for the President Zuma, there's no date, actually. On this one, there's no date. But in front, there is a date of the 22nd of June. But then the presentation talking about 26 million that Paul Masitile was the 19th of November 2010. So I just want for clarity, is this an ongoing thing that there is not enough funding for this institute. So that we must once and for all clarify all these things, because it can't go on, as the, my colleague already saying, that is so important on the issue of transformation about languages and all those things what did. So say for me, we need a clarity, because I'm totally worried and confused.
Okay. Honorable,
yes. Thank you, sir. Page 15. On 1.1, say, to establish national, hello, Kamadene, will be the units to operate as companies limited. I just want to know whether there is any progress in doing that. Number two, on page 4, bullet 2, current board was appointed in October 2007 and was then inducted for operation in June 2008. Why? Taking so long. And what is the board's actually lifespan?
Mamushana, who's the master?
Who's
the summer of Funakuta, Amako, Challenge Master? Oh, Funubudo. Muta is Lunga, one of them.
Thank you, Chairperson. I wonder if I should speak to this letter.
Yes, you can.
Thank you very much. Because I'm looking on page 1 of this letter. Wrote in the Pan South African Language Board. And paragraph number 6, the last but one paragraph, the board never owned the process. It's written in black and white. It's like it's put to us that this board has never owned the process. It's like it belongs to this. Is it Fanny, the CEO? Is it the same person this Fanny?
And we have
Feni versus Zero.
No.
It's Feni versus Pantal.
Yes. Who was the legal officer of the board?
Okay, thanks.
Then I put of the institution itself. Yes.
Thank you, Chief. Then I put it to you that it's strange that whoever wrote this knows that the board didn't own a process, and we don't have, what is the solution? I mean, if you recognize a challenge, it's always good to propose a solution at least. Because if you name it as a challenge, you don't know how to assist. Such that it's very strange that we are informed that, unless if I've missed it somewhere, there is a solution that is married to this particular if it's not there, I would say that the board should go back. And because I don't know who wrote this letter, maybe it's on behalf of the board. It's like the very same thing we're talking about. We need to bail the board out. Where is this, Mr. Fenn? Is he here? He's not here. Because if you can bring him here, you need to come here so that we can deal with him. I think we can do this. Thank you,
Master.
Chairperson, I know that I said I needed clarity on the matters that you also identified from page 21 to 24. I had a whole lot of them, but most of them you also alluded to. I'm just, you know, touched by the fact that on lines of accounting,
is Pansal's rights to the sector. Actually, maybe account, let me say, account to the Secretary of Parliament, of which the Secretary is the head of Parliament. And the committee also is a parliamentary committee. And you see, we must also talk about the duplication of these accounting lines. Because what happens with a committee, once you have brought your report to us, at a certain stage, you'll have to report to Parliament. We report to the very same Secretary of Parliament. You see, I don't know, because by now, Chairperson, if Pansal had reported to the Secretary should have informed the committee. Because we account to the office of the Secretary here in Parliament. You see, these are confusing factors. The issue of the secretary, accounting to secretary chairperson, I'm sorry, it just came after because it was emphasized by you, I think. Now it's ringing in my mind that but there's something wrong, man. I don't think we do understand the accounting lines. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
At this point, before you respond, Mr. Sook and the team, Advocate to Koto, honorable members, before you. We will just agree that today we won't finish the matter of Pansal. That's one thing that we must agree upon. And Advocate Kotor and your team.
Thank you, and once again, good afternoon.
I'm sorry, the mic in this, okay. We are recording, that man is recording inside with me.
Thank you, Chairperson. Ma'am, when I was listening to concerns and comments from the members, I have actually picked it up about four that perhaps as this office we could make some observations on and maybe try and provide some advices. We might perhaps start by saying we are this office that has the mandate of assisting Parliament to oversee the institutions supporting the democracy, which is the Chapter 9 institutions, including institutions in other chapters of the Constitution that were identified in terms of the Kara Asmal report, if we were to put it that way. But the correct name of that committee was called an ad hoc committee on the review of Chapter 9 institutions. And also to say that, ma'am, you are correct when you say Pansal is away, that the reconsideration of that report is underway here in Parliament, ma'am. So that is our mandate, ma'am. And when it is tried to be broken down, it says that we have a responsibility of working together with them with the purpose of facilitating the work for the portfolio committees and the work for the presiding officers here in Parliament. It also then says that we have a responsibility of assisting the chairpersons of the relevant portfolio committees on operational issues that they have an interest in, as well as legal issues, ma'am, as you are referring them to us now. So we are now sitting here with that kind of a dual responsibility. And hence, some of the things that I'm going to pick up, you would realize that they would be, in a way, acknowledging some of concerns that the committee would be raising to our colleagues over there, and some of them would be in support of the committee and maybe advising the committee as well. Then. The first one that I'm going to make an observation on would be the business plan, as the honorable member here made reference to, ma'am. Perhaps to say that I am making reference to that precisely because of the financial crisis that the Commission is really concerned about. As you had correctly indicated, ma'am, for money to be given to any other institution, that institution has got to bring in clear plans of action. The clear plans of action that then indicate that in terms of our mandate, this is what is expected of us. And for this particular period, we have strategized to do the following. And in strategizing to do the following thing, this is our annual performance plan. And once you have your annual performance plan, it's got to indicate your clear, targeted, measurable objectives. And those targeted, measurable objectives should necessarily be speaking to your mandate. And those measurable objectives, as Mem had indicated here, have got to be costed. And it is one of the of what the committee is interested in, because once the committee is satisfied with that, it is then that the committee would then be supporting the budget, a plan that would have been following that particular plan. Now, if the committee and any other person that the board has got to go and ask money from is not satisfied in terms of those measurable objectives, then it's not going to be easy for them to say, we will give you what you want, or we will give you anything that is near what you want. So I am not sure, ma'am, whether we have the crisis that we have now financially precisely because of that challenge. And at this particular point, I would like to say, given our mandate and our responsibility, we would want at some point to sit with the board and look at this particular thing specifically. Maybe we will come back with something that would assist the committee. Now, the second thing that comes sharply here is the funding model of the board. The funding model of the board is prescribed in the legislation. If you go to the Pensout Act itself, there are provisions there that say their money comes from appropriation by Parliament. And if you look at the same provision again, it then says the minister has got to be coming to Parliament and during the budget votes, if I were to speak it that way, so that Parliament votes for that. And the next question would be, what minister are we talking about? We are talking about the Minister of Arts and Culture. And this particular character that I am referring to now is not only unique to Pensout. It is a character that happens to all the institutions that you might want to view as parastatal or something like that. If you allow me, Chair, in this case, I would even refer to the Public Protector, I would refer to the Human Rights Commission. They also are following the same process in as far as the Department of Justice is concerned. And I am saying that this happens because of a legislation passed by this Parliament. And therefore, it can't be for us to say we don't like that. It unfortunately is what the law says. So you would also then say it also goes to the legal issues that the members referred us to. And as I have indicated, the Minister of Arts and Culture has got to come to Parliament and ask money for the board. And in terms of the Public Finance Management Act, the only issue that would be referring specifically to the board would be the issue of the accounting officer, which then says the CEO becomes the accounting officer. It's just a question of definition of who would be the CEO of an institution like the board. Now, perhaps going straight to the legal framework that governs Pensout, I have referred to so far to two pieces of legislation, which is the Pensout Act, which is an act administered by the Department of Arts and Culture, and I have referred to the Public Finance Management Act, which is an act that is administered by Treasury or the Minister of Finance. And then there would be a whole lot of other regulations, but over and above that, there would be the Constitution. So I think those three pieces of legislation would be the main pieces of legislation legislation, and it is indeed true that the Public Finance Management Act would supersede any other act that would be speaking specifically in the country on the management of finances. So that's why it supersedes any other act. It does that only in as far as the country is concerned about governance and management of finances in the country. And then the constitution basically affirms the independence of PenSalp, and the independence of PenSalp as affirmed in the constitution is in as far as they have to be performing their responsibilities. So it says they should perform their responsibilities without fear, favor, prejudice and the like, meaning that when they sit there and decide on what has to be done in terms of their mandate that is in the constitution, there shouldn't be any other person who says to them, you cannot do that, you cannot do it this way. And the constitution, I think, as well as the PenSalp Act, indicates that they report to parliament. So that's where this whole thing now of reporting comes in. It says they report to parliament. And if you look at reporting to Parliament, Parliament is a big institution. It would have the NCOP and the National Assembly. And if you say they must come and report to Parliament, the next question is practically what do you mean? And now it then again goes on to say they specifically report to the National Assembly. Now the National Assembly would then mean the House when all the members are seated in the House. So now for this to be made practical, it would then mean the National Assembly must put in place some mechanisms that would ensure that they do come and account to the National Assembly. And one of those mechanisms is the Portfolio Committee itself. And with the Portfolio Committee being there and other structures that they use being there, when Kada Asnan was given the responsibility of reviewing all the Chapter 9 institutions, it's because there were concerns from a number of institutions that there are some gaps, as they had been indicating now. And in the main, the issue was Parliament is not able to comfortably say that they are overseeing these institutions because of some gaps. When Kada looked at those gaps, Kada then thought that institutions like PenSalp and others, those institutions that when you look at all the Chapter 9 institutions and others that we call institutions supporting democracy, if you look at those specifically that are dealing with human rights, and one of the human rights would be the linguistic rights, cultural rights and the like. So he was of the view that those institutions must be clapped together. As you had indicated, say, that there seems to be some duplication from PenSalp and the one other human rights institution is. I'm basically giving a little bit of this background to the members so that at least members have an idea of what is happening. Now, I'm sure the members would then say, what then is happening to the report? The report was tabled before the National Assembly during the third parliament, the parliament before this one. And that parliament basically in a way admitted that there were some gaps, and as a matter of urgency felt that they needed at least to adopt one of the recommendations, which was the establishment of the office that I am now occupying, so that that office that I'm occupying can start finding ways of assisting the National Assembly to develop additional mechanisms that the National Assembly could use to ensure quality oversight over the institutions, and also assisting the public out there in terms of the two institutions overseeing the executive. So now we are at that office, MM, and the National Assembly did not decide to act on the other recommendations. They decided that such recommendations must be put in abeyance for this parliament, which is the fourth parliament now. And it is this parliament that is busy considering that report. The deputy speaker has been given a responsibility of spearheading this matter. And with our assistance, ma'am, we are in the process of working on that report. And for that report to be actioned properly, it's got to be taken back to the National Assembly and remind the National Assembly that it was put in abeyance for them to, to action other recommendations that are there. So then I think the point I'm trying to make now is that the concerns that the board is raising are the concerns that they had been raising in a number of platforms, including me as well, and they have been listened to, and such that they have even now been put in the Kada Asmal report. So at least when it comes to that one, the board can rest assured that somebody is working on those things, and that until the National Assembly has pronounced on those recommendations that have been made there, and those recommendations that could, if adopted, could in fact lead to even the constitutional amendments, the amendments of the whole pieces of legislation that we were worried about here, until the National Assembly has pronounced itself on that, I don't think any of us here is in any position to want to get out of the pieces of legislation that are there, including the Pens Health Act that gives us this relationship between us as the board and the Minister of Arts and Culture, and even Treasurer. Thank you, ma'am. I am hoping that I have tried to cover some of the questions that were asked. Thank you.
Okay. Advocate, I know we're all looking at the time they are sitting. Quickly, before you response, I want you, so that you can be open and transparent on these two issues of advocate Fen on the legal matters, what do you advise us to commit to do or want to look into the matter?
Ma'am, on the letter, the Fenny letter from the attorneys, we looked at it as a team quickly yesterday. And the first thing that we noticed is that the letter was addressed to us. I think it was on the 17th, yeah. And they are saying they want the response in 7 days. And now if you look at the letter, it is addressed to all the members of the committee. So there is no specific person that it has been addressed to, and there's a technicality there, because the question is who must answer to them to this letter. So on this one, we wanted to advise the committee that we could take this up as the office and write back to them, indicate to them that there is this letter which does not have an addressee, and that in terms of protocols of parliament, there are certain structures that have to be followed, and if the committee agrees with us, that now in favor of the committee could also give committee enough time to look at the facts, because they are saying it will respond in 7 days, and I think we are now left with something like 4 or so days to do so. So that is what we are advising. We have not looked at the facts of the whole matter, and while we are writing back to them, that could also give us an opportunity to look at the substance of the whole thing, or the contents of the papers that we have been given, and then we can start advising the committee properly, ma'am.
Okay. Does the committee agree on that? Okay. Okay. I know it's lunchtime, Master, but before can you ask Spencer a few questions that follow-ups maybe you should clarify us on?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. The first question was regard to the National Lexicographic Units. Really, what is the relationship between Pencil, the editor-in-chief, and Chairperson? I'd like to respond to that one, and then the legal aspect of Mr. Fenny, the new letter. I think this is the one that now at quick picture have give advice on, and then you've got the funding problems, the provincial office viability, or yes. This was with regard to the fact that did Baby Pencil look into the sustainability of these offices when they created that. They look at their budget, that it will be in the long run be able to carry it along within the constraints that they found themselves in. I'll also ask Mr. Sopi to do that. And also the funding crisis with regard to yes, the fact that on the 19th November 2010, there was a recommendation of the 26 million to be for PENSOP to be assisted in that regard. But again, it appears again on the 22nd of June, the very same amount. We have to give a clarification whether is it a consistent problem that we encounter financially, so much that every year then we'll need this 26 million to bring us into active. And I would request Mr. Sweat also to explain that clarity. And the other question was on page 51.1 about what progress that this section 21 units or structures of PENSOP have they done up to so far. And then the also, because these are the you know, administrative issues, Mr. Sopi, we have to respond to that on page 4, below number 2 as well. Why was that? Did we have that delay where we find that the board was appointed in October 2007, but it was only constituted in 2008? Chairperson, I might not be in the position to respond to that very well because it also affects me. But what I've realized that, yes, between 2007, and I'll also give Mr. Sopi to really give us clarification on that. It is also a very good question, why did we have this delay? Because there were some of the developments that have occurred, and I think some of them would have had implications on the or financial implications. For that matter. And this is one of the reasons why earlier on the CEO had to be suspended because a number of developments have occurred there as well, where there were a number of dismissals, promotions, and all that, and we had to come and bring it up to a stop. But yes, I would ask Mr. Sopi to respond to all this because they are more administrative, except that one of the board, of course. And the other one was the Advocate Fanny, that the board didn't own the process. And then how can we come up with a better, you know, harmonious solution in this regard? And also the last one, it is the duplication of the accounting lines. I think the advocate Petroya have alluded to that. Maybe we can skip that one, Mr. Sweden.
Thank you, Chair. I think I also do want to acknowledge for the purposes of the committee that perhaps we needed more time, Chair, for the committee to have read the annexures. Because a number of clarity is in the annexures, but just the time space, it's understandable that members could not have gone through all the annexures in a manner that clarifies these questions. The NLUs, we have indicated in our presentation that all have fulfilled their mandate except the one, yes, the suit where we're still waiting for the finalization of their dictionary. And the relationship with NLU's editors in chief and chairpersons. Previously, we had a problem, and these are some of the things that we addressed in corporate governance, where PENSOP was communicating more with the editors in chief than with the chairpersons. We have since fixed that because editors in chief are appointed by the chairpersons of the board. And to that extent, the board has then had engagement. As early as the 18th of March, the board had a meeting with all the chairpersons of the structures, just to speak to them about delivery, the challenges, and so on. One of the challenges is about funding, as the question was asked. You see, we are funding NLUs
on the basis of a formula crafted by Treasury that says from the allocation that we're giving Pencil, once you shall have subtracted salaries from the rest of the amount, you give 30% to the NLUs. And we have done that. When they do complain, and they have no other platform other than us to bounce their frustration. We consume it and bounce it elsewhere. And in the process, we make mistakes such as the ones we may have made around communicating to the president. But they complain about underfunding. But according to the formula, we're not underfunding them. But you see, when there's a percentage of the slice, and you're giving that percentage, if the cake is small, the percentage also drops. So the percentage is 30%, it will be 30% of something. So their complaint is understandable because we are also underfunded. That is why their concerns, when their reports come, they also have a going concern, similarly with us. So that is the basic issue that we are facing. With regards to the provincial offices, I'll answer one aspect and perhaps sub-delegate to the finance manager. What I do know in terms of our existence, in terms of our strategies, in terms of how we need to deliver on our mandate, the bulk of our work is working with provinces, is that the committees that we allude to, the provincial language committees and the national language bodies, at times do give the impression that we already have provincial representation. Therefore, it appears to be a duplication. It is not, because the provincial committees are administrative centers of PENSAL in the provinces, in the same way that departments would have provincial departments. In acting, in monitoring the provinces and the municipalities, our provincial offices are central in coordinating. So there is absolutely a reason for their existence. And as it stands, the biggest impact on our budget would be the rental of the offices. But in terms of staff in each province, we just have 3 to 2 people, but are playing a very critical role in the coordination. I think it is in our structure in terms of the positions and the availability thereof. The matter of the 19th has not been brought to our attention. We're sitting here believing that if you had a judgment that reaffirms a previous judgment, you would certainly attach it. If you are communicating to people to say, look, I've been vindicated, here is another judgment that reaffirms a previous. Such a judgment does not exist in our view, and our legal team is working on it. It has not been brought to our attention. As we know, the matter is set for the 25th of this month. So there is no judgment in our view that rules again in favor of Advocate Finney. And we are available to work with Parliament in giving all the documents at our disposal for Parliament to come up to its own conclusion. As for the board, Chairperson, and why it was inducted so late, it's going to be difficult because I also don't want us to appear as pointing fingers to the previous CEO. But the previous CEO did indicate to us that by the time she got the letter, it was long after the board has been appointed. This was her indication. So there is also an issue of communication. But I now wish to turn, Chairperson, to the critical matter which you asked about, the charges against the CEO. And the 26 million was a letter written by the office represented by Advocate Gajwai, after they had brought in the finance team of Parliament to look at our books, and they realized that there is certainly a shortfall here, and that this institution would not finish the financial year unless there is this intervention. And when that intervention did not come in the form of money, that's what led to the board suspending the project. So there is a synergy in the observations and the actions that then had to be taken to cover the issue of the shortfall. And I think that's these are two different letters, the one to the president and that which has been written by the office of the speaker to the minister. I want to deal with the critical issue of the charges against the CEO, because our indication, and Chairperson, earlier you were referring to the issues of how Advocate Feni gets these things. You see, there's a parliamentary monitoring group here whose minutes are available online. So he accesses those things. And so when matters are sub judice, we're also very cautious of placing our defenses onto the public arena through the parliamentary monitoring group. It places us at a difficulty. So as well, which is why we questioning this House that we do not use the word corruption, because corruption, even though I may not at this point give a comprehensive meaning, corruption implies that you have benefited financially as an individual. And at this point, the charges are not about that. And I would really want us to go to an extra L chair for members, so that we just take on those. You ask Chairperson whether these allegations are so serious that they can warrant dismissal. Now, I would speak, even though the members are still paging these things, because the document is still with them. At the beginning of this process, there were over 150-something allegations, which the legal team then compressed into those allegations that are dealing with financial irregularity, those that are dealing with a range of issues. And I think we were left with about 14 allegations, because they were then compressed. Now, if you look at allegation one, it talks about misconduct, breach of the PFMA, irregular expenditure with regards to the back payment of job grading. So in that regard, the CEO was found guilty. Allegation two also speaks about the fact that the CEO had gone to the board to say that the audit reports had not found, both the internal and external audit reports, had not found any irregularities with regards to the management of supply chain processes. And in this finding, it was found that she had then misled the board, because those things were already there in the auditor's reports. Which is why the board, at this point in time, requires, as a measure, so that they are not informed by me, they require that the chairperson of the audit committee reports at every board meeting, so that such reports can be brought about by the chairperson of the audit committee. Allegation 3 deals with authorizing an amount of 1.6 million rands. We had a partnership with, we already indicated that these NLUs, National Lexicography Units, are housed at universities. And when they do not comply with our regulations, we then suspend funding. That has happened in this instance. But when the funding was reopened, the portion that was supposed to go to the university was then paid to the NLU, which then meant that we have an obligation to the university. And whilst paying that, we needed to recover the money from the NLU. And that is irregular. So she was found guilty on that as well. Chairperson, I don't intend to go through all of them, but all we're proving is that these are financial irregularities as opposed to the concept of corruption. And indeed, the chairperson of the hearing, in a prelude to the findings, indicates the seriousness of such allegations to the management of the organization. But all we wanted to indicate is that it is not strictly corruption, because corruption would be something else where you make underhand deals for purposes of benefiting.
Thank you. Members, the last round. Unless you don't want lunch, it's fine. We can continue. On the left, on our story, who also wants to go? Okay, Moshwana.
Is that all?
Okay. Dr. Chair, I just wanted to say my question wasn't answered.
Which one?
That was concerning the provincial offices. It was not the justification for it. It was whether there were actual budget planning done for it before it was established.
Okay. Master?
Chairperson. Now that I think we're wrapping up. I just want to highlight that I've got a very serious concern about this Feni letter from Feni, because from what I hear, there is one party that is, you know, it's the PenSouth board or Feni, the advocates of Feni misleading parliament. That is a very serious thing. So I would request advocating that when you are dealing with this, you should please return to us and tell us what to do. I don't think we can allow such a thing. The other thing is that we accept what PenSouth is saying about the CEO, and in defense of what we said about corruption. But these are very serious issues that you have just highlighted. I don't know how do we classify them. Maybe corruption sounds, you know, as a very serious word, but I think they have got serious implications. If this is what you are telling us, I think, Chairperson, we should deal with this also in our consideration of the report. I wanted to say, according to what Advocate Ejayo has explained to us, you know, on the legal matters, now that we are coming to the end, Chairperson, I needed to PenSouth to explain to us whether they accept the explanation of Advocate Ejayo, so that it can enable us to give our report to Parliament in a true perspective of the whole thing. Because there are maybe areas of where Advocate Sajayo has explained to us, and these are addressing our concerns that we had as a committee. Now, we should be, you see, on par. When we give a report, it mustn't be a report that is going to be denied by the other party. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. On this letter written by Advocate Singh, there is this allegation that the incumbent CEO should lock the office when he goes away. Is there nobody deputizing?
How can the office be locked when the CEO?
Yeah, I'm reading it here in black and white. The incumbent CEO is traveling across the length, blah, blah, blah. And the last straw was when he decided to close the office on the 11th of December because he wanted to go home as his brother was getting married. It's like he closed the office according to him. And I'm checking if there is no deputy. Because unless nobody deputizes the CEO, yeah, like CEO, nobody must be second on that particular level. Can we just get clarity on that? Thank you.
Okay. Council.
Thank you, Chair. The issue of budgeting funding for the provincial offices, which were established in 2003-2004, the PenSouth was given an amount of 10 million rands by Treasury to establish the 9 provinces. So it started by hiring offices, buying furniture and all equipment to run the office and employ those 9 provinces. Then on the following year, it was just increasing by 5% as part of this. Yes, there was a budget allocation of 10 million at that time to run those provincial offices.
Okay. Any response?
Thank you, Chair.
Certainly, we're very happy with the explanations given by the Office of the Speaker of the Legislation. In fact, we are of the view that it affirms all the legislation that we have cited and the need to deal with the grey areas. As far as may we have appeared before the Portfolio Committee before, we have denied these allegations and they are unsubstantiated. I mean, nobody in his right frame of mind can close the entire organization because you want to go home. It does not go that way. We have delegations and sub-delegations that we have indicated in our corporate governance. There are so many other allegations that we can pick up on, but all are unsubstantiated. And we have dealt with those issues because we report as an office to a board. And there are forensic investigations in this file that dismisses these allegations that are in front of you. So the board has owned the processes and dealt with these issues. And we also do want to indicate that Advocate Feni is not with PENSAP. He is a former employee of PENSAP, who is, however, as a citizen of the country, entitled to take us through these legal processes. Just to explain why we would not be able to come with him to such processes. So it is a number of issues, and we agree that the charges are quite serious, and we request that the board be given the opportunity to consider the sanction that will be coming, and that will report to all relevant structures within the authority of the board to deal with the matter. Just want to check, Chair, if there's any other matter you want me to deal with. Yeah, we've also dealt with that. Chair, if there are any matters, because we continue to interact with both the department, the Office of the Speaker, and the Portfolio Committee, we are always available to provide information. We have done so in the past, and all these matters, we are grateful for the opportunity.
Thank you. I will make my closing remarks. I think all members of the Portfolio Committee are fine. But before I close, Dr. Jogan, appointment.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, for the opportunity. But I just want to indicate that from the department side, we don't have any comment to make. Thank you.
Okay. Would you call?
Ngoba umcimbi ngumnye honorable chair kuba logo iningi lento esiyifumana apha and ingathi noko isekhona information eseleyo and iliqela bendithi ndizawu aphile lapha kuwe ukuba ngawubacele basilinde kancinci sakhe siyolungiseka into abekhishini uba kukho into abangxamisekileyo.
Okay. Enkosi bawuthixela. Honorable members, I believe the first thing before we close, I just want to make my remarks on my side to say that PENSAP is not the last time they'll be here this year, because I don't think we are really happy with what is happening in the organization. As much as we have explained some of the things and clarities, yes, we understand, but I think a lot still has to be done. This committee will also mandate the Office of Advocate to look at the matters, because it's not in our jurisdiction to that word in Lingzi. It's long, jurisdiction. On legal matters, you know, as a committee. That's why we have the legal advocate in the team as well. Also to look into the matter of Advocate Feni, also to look at, because there's also another letter from the FALCO attorneys as well, which will give you a copy. So those are the matters that we as a committee cannot say anything or take decisions about, because we can't be bound. Unfortunately, what is on the website, it's not controllable, because we're a transparent parliament, we're a transparent government. That's why I thought we must not get very deep into those legal matters as well. But I hope we'll also get a judgment on Friday on that about the CEO as well. And also it's a matter that also your office must look into it as well. Why are we also putting the legal team on board? These things they attempted to us. We are not legal experts. You know, I'm a human expert. If you can ask me about the organs and everything, then I can tell you. And as I'm a human science person, but at the end of the day, we believe that Mr. Swip, there should be a turnaround strategy on PulseHelp. Understand your grievance as well about the finances. But I must be honest with you, if you don't involve us as a portfolio committee and you run up high in the highest office, we didn't want to be in a position where we feel we will start declining you as well. Because if you want to intervention, you start from the portfolio committee. Then we take it up to the minister. We would assist as much as possible if we see a plan that you really need the money. Because people only say they want money, but you don't even see the plan. But I think Pencil was not just created out of a vacuum. It was because we are addressing the past, especially when it comes to issues of languages and other matters as well. To me, even now, to speak English is something that is very difficult. That's why I can't call jurisdiction or now. But for me, it's caused by Ion Dambuyam. So also on the matter to the department, I'd like to say, look into the minister as representing the minister, the DG, the issue of the board. As the presentation says that there are people from other languages who are saying that they are not represented in the board. I think it's a matter that has to be looked into as well. For now, fortunately or unfortunately, to pencil, you have to liaise with the minister. Because at the end of the day, you still need that political intervention as well. And I've been reading the Act on Finances, your Act. It's very clear that you speak to the minister, you know, because we understand the truth. Dynamics on the Act, but unfortunately for now, also when you need intervention, that one thing I'm very sure of, the president, I'm not talking on his behalf, but we'll take that letter back to the minister to say these are the people that say they want more money. Mm-hmm. When I'm very certain that will also happen, but I'm not responding on behalf of the president. I'm just saying it's something that might happen as well. But as we come next time, I want to see the turnaround strategy, what we think must be done, what plans we have as pencil as well. Because unfortunately, you can go to treasury, but if you don't have a plan, then you can't convince them as well. Also, as a committee, you cannot convince the minister as well if you don't see a strategy turn around. Workplace issues will never be the nice place. There's never a nice commotion, but I honestly, from my side, I'm not saying I'm defending work, but I wouldn't love to see these dismissals. Unless, obviously, you have to do it if it has to happen. This process, I don't have a way to say it, but in Jehudi, and as if maybe there's unhappiness, I always believe on one-on-one relations. I think maybe the extinct CEO for now, it's what you must do with the staff as well, so that people may be able to. Because in meetings like that, people are not happy to say how they feel about you. But if it's on a one-on-one basis, so that you can understand how the people feel. Obviously, when someone is acting, you will never be like, why did they choose you? Why did you? We know those things. We come from workplaces as well. But try so that they can be that normalness. Because at this point in time, I'm telling you, as long as Advocate Fanny at this point in time, I'm not accusing him. Who will ensure that they slow down in work? Who will ensure that, you know what I'm saying, we've been in workplaces, so bitterness will cause those issues. But also, next time when you come, please liaise with the committee secretary or with me as well to say who to bring, you know, because it would be good to have with senior management as well, especially on HR matters, because to me, Dr. Malate doesn't run day-to-day HR basis, doesn't run day-to-day finances as well. So you'd want a person who will come and account, you know. Even as a CEO, there are things that if I can ask you now, you wouldn't know what is happening right now, because there's a person on day-to-day
daily basis who's running with those things. And a transformation in your sector as well. I know you are still saying you don't have money to fill those posts. Yes, obviously affirmative action will apply, but gender has to apply as well. You must gender balance people living with disability. You still need them in that institution. And and what are you also doing for youth development? That one I will not leave. What are you doing with the youth of South Africa? Where are you putting them in? Especially now I'm really excited in the youth. They come even worse than before. So what are you doing with the youth, you know, and maintain those relations with provinces, unfortunately, because you still need those people. You still need to convince those embassies and those HODs, you know. Sometimes it's not a matter of not wanting to give money. It's a matter of not understanding what is supposed to happen and those reporting structures. Maybe I'm a mafia from Soweto. You know, I like to wave away from laws, but sometimes they will restrict you to such an extent that even the person who can assist you, like the department right now, would not, because you'll be still holding on to the law. I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying that the reason that we try to create relations, like last week when I said meet the teacher, we don't want that hostility because of the laws and the acts that are there, because you'll be using these acts, and sometimes you'll be closing doors that might be open for pencil as well. Because at the end of the day, the same person who must lobby for you, even in other structures, even like the DG's gone, it's still the minister, it's still the department, it's still us, you know. And because the moment you distance yourself from this building, say they don't want any relations with us, there's nothing we can do. I think we must also improve it as well. We don't want to see PANSAL collapse, and no one would want to see that at the end of the day. Honorable members and PANSAL, thank you for coming to present, and to the department, thank you as well. Thank you from PMG. Thank you to Advocate and your team, Mkokeli, and independent media. And as I said, it's not the end of it. In the next term, we might see you. I'd like you to excuse us, thank you. Even if you can wait for us outside, if you want to talk to me privately and other members. I just want to talk to the members just a few minutes. Then tell them. Otherwise, thank you for coming. You are just released. Thank you. Just 5 minutes will be our thanks.